Today's episode of Robin's Podcast is sponsored by Bet Online. With no NBA, NHL, or MLB right now, you might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on, or let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack games. They're all open 24 hours a day and all online. The Bet Online casino never closes. If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the weather. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive a welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One. That's Bet Online to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast One for your 100% sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget about the promo code Podcast One, all one word, for your 100% sign-up bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's going to make sure to nail everything down around here before Adam Klein comes back in the studio. I am Rob's sister, Nino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. We've got a good one for you today. We've got Andrea Belke, three-time Survivor, Miss Survivor. She'll be here from People Now, ready and excited to talk with Andrea today on the podcast. Of course, we had a spirited Survivor know-it-alls last night talking about everything from a wild episode of Survivor. Going to try to make sense even a little bit more today when we get into everything with Andrea Belke on the podcast. Of course, this weekend, we got another good one coming up. Hannah Shapiro is going to be back, not in the studio this time, sadly. Last time she was here, she got into the Five Timers Club five seasons in a row since Millennials versus Gen X. Here with me in the studio, we will be over Skype for the first time doing our podcast. Get your feedback questions in for Hannah on Saturday. robhaswebsite.com/voicemail 323-282. RHAP for that. Plus, we've still got everything coming up with this week in Survivor. Angie Konta will be our guest. We'll update the character types, how they're doing so far this season. And of course, don't forget to get your wand offs in for the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. All right, I'm very excited to bring our guest on today, as we are always thrilled when we get to talk to this three-time Survivor great. She's joining us from back home on the ranch, the host of People Now, the great Andrea Belke. Andrea, how are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I love that you call it a ranch. I've never called it a ranch.
It's a farm. Yeah.
In Wisconsin, in the Midwest, it's a farm. I think that you probably got the ranch thing from Steven, right? Because he always calls it a ranch.
No, I don't get anything from him. But he's been so impressed by with your litter of puppies. And that a lot of people didn't know this about Steven, that puppies are his soft spot. Now, your dog that gave birth, what kind of dog is that?
It's a yellow lab.
So he's it's close to a golden retriever, though. That's his absolute favorite.
Okay. So some resemblance there to the golden retriever.
Yes.
No, it's been such a treat to have puppies here. And a lot of people actually have been talking about it. Dalton Ross, who doesn't really like dogs, he's more of a cat person. Even he has been invested in these puppies. But the crazy thing is, when I got here, because I've been in Wisconsin, oh man, I think it's been 3.5 weeks now.
Yeah.
Maybe going on 4. And I've lost all track of time, but they didn't have their eyes open. They barely moved. And now they're just growing up. They're little ferocious beasts. And by the time this quarantine's over, they're going to be full on doggos.
Full on doggos, like all of us. How many dogs were in the litter?
There's 7 and they're all girls except for one.
Oh, okay. So this is wild, but that's great Insta content. So we've all been enjoying seeing that. How's everything else with being back home for all this extended period of time?
I mean, I'm happy to be home just because I got out right before everything got crazy. And it was honestly the day after I left and came to Wisconsin that everything shut down. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I got out at a time that was, because you know how it is. It's kind of really tricky to travel right now.
Right.
And so I got out of there, I quarantined at home, and then now it's been enough time where I feel really healthy, my family's healthy, and I'm happy to be out of the city. And I live by myself in New York City, and I honestly think I would have went insane.
Yeah.
Like I'm an extrovert, and I would have lost my mind. And mm-hmm. so I'm happy to be around other people just for my sanity. And being on a farm is really great because I can go riding horses and play with the pups, and it's been good.
You have a lot of stuff to do, but you know, you went home and obviously you didn't expect to be there for that long. Are you like, is it like being on Survivor? Do you just have like basically like one suitcase with you of like, and you have none of your stuff?
I didn't bring anything. I honestly, okay. Yeah. So I'm not even kidding. I decided I was going to come home and I bought a flight that day for a couple hours later. I thought I was going to be here for a week and then go back to New York. Now I have two younger sisters who have some clothes here. Yeah. We're about the same size. So I usually just wear their clothes anyway, but turns out I'm probably going to be here for another few months. And so I've been wearing all of my sister's clothes. They're all pissed at me because they can't find their shirts because I have to wear clothes for my show, mm-hmm. which I'm doing on Zoom.
Yeah.
So I honestly came with absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So this is my sister Charlotte's shirt right now.
Okay. All right. So, well, it's nice to know that you're safe and sound and everybody is doing okay over there. And really glad that you were able to make some time for us. And the weird thing about that, you know, we've podcasted so many times that I feel like that I've podcasted with you more from your parents' house than from you being in New York. And you've lived in New York for what, like 8 years?
I've been in New York almost a decade.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And because I moved out there when I was 21. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I feel like the last three times that we podcasted, I was here in Wisconsin in this room.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I either see you the live show in New York or either then we do a call and you're at your parents' house.
Yeah, I mean, at least this time I you can't see it, but I'm speaking into a lav microphone. Yeah.
Well, you have a whole professional setup there now.
Yeah, because we're doing our show from here. And so work sent me some equipment. I have a ring light.
Yeah, look at you.
Moving up, because last time we podcasted, I know that we couldn't use your option A, B, or C because my Wi-Fi was so bad.
Yeah, we were just on the phone last time. It's fine. It worked for Howard Stern and Tom Brady, so we can make it work for us too. So let me get your take on everything that's going on with Survivor for the Winners at War. Are you enjoying season 40 so far?
I'm loving it. It's so fun. I was worried because I'm not the biggest fan of Edge of Extinction. Whenever I say that, I have Reen coming after me on Twitter.
Dude.
But I think it works for this season because you do get to see a lot of those old school players mm-hmm. that we love on the Edge. And so I just think it's great. I mean, especially after last season, you know, this season has been so fun to watch. And I feel like it hasn't been that nasty of a game. It's actually been very funny at times. Mm-hmm. So I've had a blast watching it. And now that we're all on lockdown, I feel like a true, true Survivor fan because I really only have Wednesdays to look forward to.
Yeah.
Like in the past, like, of course I love watching Survivor, but I was busy or maybe I was going out on a Wednesday with friends.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for Wednesday.
Well, you really have seen it all in your three times out on Survivor. I think a lot of people probably forget that you are a person who is a Redemption Island returnee, even for somebody who's out of the game and came back in. Do you feel like that Redemption Island has anything over the Edge of Extinction?
I do think so, because the thing about Redemption Island was you had to really work hard to stay in the game. Mm-hmm. Like Matt Elrod won so many duels in a row mm-hmm. and got back in the game. And at the Edge, they're just kind of chilling. And then there's one random challenge that they have to get back in. And I didn't even like the challenge that they had to get back in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's gotta be something that combines a ton of elements. And it's like, if you just happen to be good at that sort of whatever that's called. I don't even know what that's called. The challenge that they had to get the ball
course?
In the hole.
Yeah.
But then the
snake maze. Yeah.
Snake maze thing, whatever that is. So I think that redemption, at least you had to keep winning. And then if you got back in, it's like, wow, well, you won 11 duels. And that's really impressive. But I just think the Edge has some kinks that needs to be worked out.
Yeah. And with the Redemption Island, you know, you had to win duel after duel to stay there. And I think that's been one of the complaints that people have had about this season, where somebody like Natalie, who's the first person who's out, has like the most chances to accumulate the fire tokens and actually one of the better chances to get back in, as opposed to Yule, who gets voted out and then has to then go into the Edge of Extinction challenge with no advantages because he got voted out right before they had the challenge.
Yeah, and I would like to see a challenge where everyone has an equal shot, because we're watching all these legends try to get back in the game. And then, you know, some people have an extra advantage. I don't know. It gets a little convoluted, I think. But I'm also, I don't know, am I old school? I feel like I'm a little more old school.
I think you are now.
I think I actually am old school, but I really don't like all the twists and the fire tokens and all of the random things, because I can't keep it straight. And I kind of, it's like a little too much for me.
It's a little too much. And that all of these ideas might even be okay. Like, you could sort of wrap your head around if we had like, you know, a 3-hour episode where we could really sort of understand what's going on, but just it's too fast. It's like we're just, you know, trying to absorb everything so quickly that nothing is making sense in terms of what's going on. But I wanted to get your take on this tribal council, which we got to last night, where it, as Adam said before tribal council, everything turned to chaos, and we saw where everything was going on at the tribal council. And I wanted to know, in your experience in Survivor Game Changers, did you ever experience anything that was close to this in terms of, like, you know, with this very fast gameplay where everybody is talking and the target is shifting so much?
Not as much. I feel like for some reason I haven't been on seasons that were shifting that much a tribal council. And I feel like I really miss out, because I watch it and I have FOMO of like, man, why can't I be on a season that's actually live at tribal council?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
What about on the beach though? Like, did you ever have times where it was, that frantic where things were changing around so much right before tribal council?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in a weird way, I actually had more of that on Karamoan, because in Karamoan, I was more in charge with Dawn and Cochran. And so there was a lot of times where I switched a vote last second on Karamoan, where it was supposed to be, we were going to blindside Malcolm, but Malcolm had the idol. And I got, that was the episode where there's this scene with Eddie and me, and I'm trying to get information out of him and doing these puppy dog eyes and trying to work it. And Eddie actually spills that there's an idol and I'm the target. And so I freaked out and I changed the vote last minute. Honestly, right before we were on lockdown to go to tribal council. No. This is when we actually took out Snowy.
Oh, Michael Snow.
Yeah. And so I last minute changed it to Michael Snow, because I was worried that if Malcolm played an idol, it would be me. Everyone on my tribe didn't want to do it. And this was so last minute. The producers did not want me to do it. They kept saying, I thought you were going to make big moves, Andrea. Don't you want to go for the target, the big threat? And so meeting Malcolm, because they wanted Malcolm to play the idol and me to go home, because it's a better move than us going for Snowy. So I changed it last minute, and it was the freakiest, scariest moment ever on that season, because we did it right before I went to tribal council, and then I was right. And that was the time where it could have went either way, and everyone is mad at me, and I decided to go with the safer vote, which then saved me. Game Changers was actually more cagey, and I know Jeff keeps saying this season is cagey, and it's not cagey, because this season people are actually throwing names out there. They're confronting people. But on Game Changers, no one would ever say a name. You'd go up to someone and say, oh, who do you think? They're like, I don't know. I'm just kind of hoping we win. Okay.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to decide later. And so Game Changers is actually really, really cagey.
So how did anything ultimately then get decided on Game Changers? That nobody was talking to anybody, or people were just only talking to their person and not so much with a big group?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you would talk kind of with like your group, your like little alliance. It wasn't so much, I mean, Game Changers still had the two different sides. So there was the Debbie and the Brad and the Troyzan, and I guess Sarah was between. So I knew what my sort of group was going to do. And then there was the other side, and there was no kind of going back in between. Like, I had no conversations with Brad or Troyzan or Sarah, because I didn't trust, or it was Sarah I did, but yeah, with anyone on that side, because I didn't trust them at all. That was also Sierra as well. And so it was just different. And I kind of wish I was on a season where everyone talked to everyone and you had chances to be in alliances with people all across the tribe.
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's what this season is. And there's definitely more movement.
Yeah.
Where Game Changers, we are kind of stuck in these majority kind of alliances.
So would you say that this season is maybe more like Karamoan of the three seasons that you played, where it's sort of like that there's like seven or eight people that are all together sort of like deciding what's going to happen. And then really the only couple people that seem to be on the bottom are the, you know, Nick and Michelle and Adam.
It seems like it. Yeah, I think right now it seems that a lot of people are really getting along, except for whoever is on the outs. But I think that that will probably change pretty quickly here.
Yeah. Can you help me try to understand what we saw last night in terms of everything getting so chaotic and then all of the movement at Tribal Council, where that it seemed like that there was a plan for Adam, but I'm not sure what the other plans were and how many of them were like real plans?
I don't know. I mean, I really do think that everyone in the majority knew that they were safe. So they were all just trying to stick to one plan and then go with it. But then mm-hmm. everyone else was freaking out because everyone had different ideas. And so they changed it so many times. It was really hard to follow.
Yeah, it was very hard to follow. And, I watched it again this afternoon to try to figure out what I could see to make sense of it. And, you know, it really was tricky because we don't know. There's so much that we don't know. Do you suspect that these things just were changing very late, where we saw like a lot of like the last like 20 minutes before Tribal Council, as opposed to where, you know, things had been going back and forth for the whole final day before the vote?
If I had to guess, it almost seems like this was happening later in the day, because mm-hmm. that's why it was so frantic. On Karamoan, we had a day where I think it was when Francesca went home. Mm-hmm. So really early, first vote. And I just remember it was a similar thing. That's where, you know, you would go up to one or two people and then you'd say, okay, we're going to go with so-and-so. And everyone's like, yeah. Then you'd go to another group. They said another person. You would go back to the original group and they'd say a different person. You're like, what's going on? And so you have to keep moving because you don't want to be involved in the group that says your name. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of seems like it was happening, but it was probably happening right before Tribal Council. And everyone was freaking out because they just wanted to make sure that they were in on the actual plan.
Yeah, that's what I think also, because then I think that then they went to Tribal Council and people were still like, wait, I don't know what's going on. And there was a lot of talking and whispering in terms of what was going on. And, you know, it's hard because even in the edit, you know, we don't even know if things are happening in the right order in terms of like what we're seeing in terms of how it went down. But in watching it again, that we see Denise come to talk to Kim and say Sarah, which was the name that Adam was saying. And I'm wondering if maybe this is telling me that Denise and Jeremy were maybe lower on the totem pole in terms of they weren't part of the original Dakal group, where that they were from the original Sele tribe. And I'm wondering if maybe that they were sort of approached by Adam because they weren't part of like the main plan that was deciding who was going to be, like, we see people like Tony and Kim and Tyson and Sarah, and they're all talking about what the plan is going to be. But I feel like that maybe Jeremy and Denise might be like a rung underneath like the bigger group in that alliance.
It kind of seems like that, especially Denise, because last week we saw everyone just talking about how they were kind of wanting to target her. And so I think she's probably not going to have much longer in the game, if I had to guess. So I think you're right. I think she and Jeremy probably seem a little bit lower than everyone else. And then you saw Jeremy with all his different faces every mm-hmm. time they brought someone up, which I thought was so funny. I mean, the edit was great.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeremy seemed like he was just like sitting on the park bench, and then that he would be like surprised every time he heard a different name.
I know. And then all of a sudden Tyson, why isn't more people targeting Tyson? That's what I'm confused about.
Well, this is a great question, and it definitely did start to come up. And I thought that, you know, I was wondering whether or not, like, could Tyson be just like a total decoy where, you know, are Nick or Adam throwing out Tyson's name? But I saw, like, I was trying to watch, because every time I saw Adam or Michelle or Nick in the conversation, I'm like, well, I have to take this with a grain of salt, because they might just be throwing them a decoy name in terms of what they're saying. But I saw in one of the conversations, Sarah and Sophie, two people that you know very well, Andrea, they were saying, Sarah says to Sophie, hey, I wouldn't mind seeing Tyson go home on this vote, which makes me think that those are two people with a lot of power in the game, that maybe Tyson's name really was on the chopping block.
Yeah, I guess I'm surprised that if Tyson's name was brought up, that more people wouldn't jump on board. However, you know that Kim and Tyson are close. So maybe Tyson does have friends still in the game.
Yeah.
And he does have some protection, because I think what was happening is someone would bring up a name and then it would try to go around to all the little mini groups, and then it would be blocked by someone. And then that person would suggest another name, and then it would go back around to the mini groups, and no one could get on the same page because they were all talking in twos and threes. Mm-hmm.
So I want to bring in questions from the listeners as we're going through some of this stuff. Stan McCutcheon wants to ask you, in Redemption Island, Matt, a.k.a. Wyatt Nash, was voted out right as soon as he got back in the game. Do you think the contestants of this season will regret not doing the same thing to Tyson?
I mean, if Tyson... If Tyson wins, they're going to regret it. But
you gotta vote whoever comes in right back out.
I think that there's bigger threats to win the game than Tyson. Mm-hmm. And so it's a much different season. You know, I think that Tony, Jeremy, I mean, they're much bigger threats than Tyson. I just don't think that it's a different situation where, like, Matt Elrod would have beat anyone out there on Redemption Island.
Yeah. Is that because that he sort of had bonds with everybody from Redemption Island, or it was impressive that he won all of those duels?
Definitely both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, when he first got back in, it was pre-jury, but it was so impressive. And, you know, he's this lovable guy that just had a really rough go at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask you about Adam just a little bit in terms of his scrambling. What did you make of Adam's last stand last night?
Look, I love Adam. I know that some people maybe aren't as big of fans as they were of him maybe the first season this time, because I don't know. Are you a fan of Adam?
Adam is the nicest guy. And we've gotten on, like, different moves that he's made, but he is the sweetest person in this, you know, in the Survivor community, maybe outside of you, Andrea, the nicest person that there is out of any of these people.
Rob. Yeah.
I was just saying that because you were here, but that Adam is such a nice person. He would give you the shirt off his back. He plays hard. And he wears his heart on his sleeve, and I don't know how people could not like him. Like, okay, if you don't think he's the greatest player, that's fine. But he's such a likable person.
Well, it's so interesting when you're watching a season where you know so many of the people.
Yeah.
He can do no wrong in my eyes. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if he is going off the deep end or doing crazy things. I'm always going to be like, oh, I love Adam. Just because he is, like you said, the sweetest person, like top five nicest survivors I've ever met. Mm-hmm. I love him dearly.
They're not all nice.
No. Oh, no, not at all. Should we do a podcast about the mean ones?
One day. That'll be my last podcast. I'll go out on that one.
We could really go in on some.
Yeah. No, but he would. But I think he would give just about anybody who needed something, he would give it to you. That he is just the nicest guy. And he has so much exuberance. And I understand why that rubbed people the wrong way. I do think there's an age divide also that we, you know, we've talked about, you know, old school versus new school, and the old school is gone. But the three youngest players, if I have this correct, are the three players that are on the bottom. That it does seem like that the survivors that are sort of like the 30 plus players have sort of like, OK, we've organized. We're like the adults, and kids, you guys sit at the kids table. Now you're not really part of this.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize the age difference there, but you're right. Because Nick, Michelle, and Adam are all very young.
And Wendell, who is, you know, a little bit older, like is like more of like a youthful personality, not to shade, you know, all of my friends who are my contemporaries who are on Survivor. But there really is kind of an age gap between, I don't know who's the oldest of that group. I feel like that maybe Adam is like 28 or 29. But then I think there's probably like a 10-year age difference between him and the next oldest person that's on the season.
Well, I actually love that it skews older, because when I first did Survivor, I was 21, then I was 23, then I was 27. I actually wish that I would have played Survivor the age I was in Game Changers, mm-hmm. which was 27, because I don't think at 21 and 23, it doesn't count.
Right.
Those seasons don't count.
Right.
I wish that I would have been a little older when I started. But, well, because then now, you know, some of these seasons are really young. Like, I remember when I went out for Ghost Island and everyone was 22. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm way past my prime here on Survivor. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to see a season where it does skew a little older.
Yeah.
But then going back to Adam, not only is he a sweet person, but I like his passion, and he's so smart and observant. And watching him at Tribal Council, I was truly rooting for him. I mean, I went through this range of emotions when I found out he might go and get the idol. Because at first I felt so bad for him, because clearly everyone was voting for him. And then my whole family's watching. And as soon as he's going to read the votes, Jeff, and Adam goes up there, we all start screaming, get the idol, get the idol. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was just, you feel real bad for him.
You know, so just fact checking myself live as we're doing this, of course, Sophie is only 30, but she's sort of off with all the other people that are all the married people that all have families. And Sophie is the one person who's with that group who is the outlier, where it does seem like the other three people who are on the bottom are sort of at the kids' table.
Oh, yeah. Sophie is only 30.
But she's very mature, very mature for 30.
How old is Nick Wilson? He's 29.
He's 29. And Sarah is 36, I think, at the time of filming.
And then Michelle's 29.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still the youngest. But yeah, Sophie's in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Ben, I think, is 37. But then the rest of that group outside of Sophie, they're all the people that are married. They're all the people that have a family. And so I do think that there's a little bit of a disconnect there was the group of people that have a lot in common. And then there are the people who are sort of like more on the outs, that they have a different life and maybe like a different sensibility about them.
Yeah, if you went back on Survivor, is that your life now? You're going to be with them?
Oh, I think I would get along with that group. I think that I'd probably be, you know, more with, like, I definitely would be the old guy if, like, I was on a season with, like, you know, like the 20-somethings. They'd be like, who's this guy? Is 100 years old? I'm not going to talk to him.
I mean, even for me, I'm like, if I ever play Survivor again, I'm going to be one of the older ones, which is so insane to me, because my whole life I've been one of the younger ones, mm-hmm. on Survivor, and then it's kind of switched. And now that I'm in my 30s, I'm like, oh my gosh, if I ever played again, I'm going to be like the old geezer.
I don't think so. I mean, you're 31?
I'm turning 31 in May.
Okay. All right. So I think you're still, I think you still got a lot of time. I think you're still good. You'll be old school. That'll be your problem.
Yeah, which is, I like old school.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be now, next year is going to be 10-year anniversary of Redemption Island?
Yeah.
How will Survivor commemorate the 10-year anniversary of Redemption Island?
Well, it was one of the best seasons. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're going to go all out.
Yeah.
It's going to be so great.
So they'll bring Boston Rob back, and it'll be three seasons in a row that they'll have him back.
Yeah, I mean, it was a season of a lot of moves, mm-hmm. and a lot of risk takers, you know, people really shaking things up.
Yeah.
The whole cast of Game Changers.
All right. Speaking of Game Changers, I really want to talk with you about Sarah, because I'm really very interested in her game.
And I want to say it's nothing against, okay, I don't want to totally diss Redemption Island cast. Everyone knows I always am self-deprecating about myself on Redemption Island. So I don't want all the Redemption Island people.
Why? Who from me? Redemption Island is listening to this podcast?
You're right. Probably nobody.
Natalie? Ralph Kaiser?
Grant Nachos?
Yeah. Graham Matos. So I want to talk with you about Sarah. I'm very interested in hearing your take about Sarah, because, you know, I think back to some of our past conversations, and you and I even spoke last season, and we were talking about things that were from Game Changers, and you were talking about Sarah and your relationship with her, and how she did such a great job of developing these personal relationships. And then there were so many of you that were in that game that were like, I thought Sarah was my best friend. And then I don't even know if she liked me. And we saw this move last night where Sarah, seemingly out of nowhere, said, Jeff, I'd like to give up my spot at the reward to Nick. And we said, oh, this is odd. This is unusual. And there were definitely eyebrows raised in the game. We saw Adam talk about, I don't trust Sarah as far as I can throw her. And I can't even throw very far.
Wow, that's good.
Jeremy thought that was weird. Tony thought she got caught up in the moment. So I want to get your take. But Sarah told us, and I don't know why she would lie to us in confessional. No, this was a human moment. So what did you make of all of this?
This was so weird for me because, to me, Sarah is one of the most dangerous Survivor players because she convinced every single person on our tribe that we were best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they were best friends with her. Every single one of us thought that we were Sarah's number one. And I'm not even joking. When we were at Ponderosa, and I told this last time, but it's just so crazy because I thought Sarah was my best friend. Zeke thought Sarah was his best friend. Ozzy thought, Sari thought. I mean, she tricked an entire tribe. And none of us are, you know, going and having tailgates in Iowa right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, she completely bamboozled all of us.
Yeah.
And I just think after playing with a few winners, though, Sarah is so dangerous and she's so scary to play with because she's so good. So
I believe
it. Watching her do that, and it was just so weird because I don't understand. I'm actually still really at a loss for words because I don't know why Sarah, who I look up to as like this amazing Survivor player, would make such a bad move. And the only thing I thought about was, is it possible that because on Game Changers, she got an edit that maybe wasn't the most likable, and the fan reaction was that they didn't really like her that much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe subconsciously, she was trying to bring out some of the more human moments of herself and human aspects of herself. And maybe was that something kind of for the edit? Does that sound like a possible theory?
Do you get the sense that she cares about stuff like that? Because I don't really feel like she does.
But I don't know. I don't understand why else she would do that. It's Sarah Lucina, mm-hmm. who's ruthless.
Yeah.
How would she just have a moment of feeling for somebody and who doesn't even want to pay her back? He wants to vote her out next.
Yeah. And I don't know for sure that I think that there was some talk that she was even one of the people that voted for Nick at that tribal council. So Nick got two votes. I'll look on the wiki and see if they have that information yet. But it looks like that she might have even been one of the people that voted against Nick in the vote split. So I don't know. It just, to me, it feels like, and again, she said in confessional, I don't know why she would lie to us at home, that no, this was really that she was trying to just do something nice for Nick after he got blindsided. But I just think that we've seen her game before. And this is almost like that when Sarah Lucina does something nice for you, it's almost like you hear like the Jaws music of like, dun, dun, dun. Oh, it's about to happen again. Like, she's doing something nice for me because then I'm going to lower my defenses. And then that's how she gets you. It's like the same like horror movie over and over again for people.
I mean, she would have hearts to hearts with us about our family, about how proud our family is going to be of us. And then she would just completely slit our throats. Like, Sarah is a ruthless Survivor player. And that's why, I don't know. I know maybe my theory is wrong.
And kudos to her. That's ideal.
No, that's ideal. That's why she's so good at Survivor. But that's why I'm wondering if, you know, a lot of times people try to overcorrect things from their first season or their second season.
But she won.
And no, she did win. But all of these people won. And she had a really bitter jury that actually questioned her character. And so maybe she was trying to kind of correct that behavior
mm-hmm.
in this way. And look, I don't know Sarah that well outside of the game, and I'm sure she does mm-hmm. have these wonderful moments and is a kind person. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she is. I don't know. I can't really to speak onto that.
Yeah. So again, and according to the Survivor Wiki, she was one of two votes for Nick, her and Denise, according to the Survivor Wiki. And I don't know where they get this from because it's not in the episode, but that's what they're reporting.
It was not a good move because immediately all eyes were on her. She was a target. That's why I think that it was just a bad move that did have some potential gain for her. I think she wanted to show a human moment for the jury. I really do. And I think that in the final tribal council, because she got all this backlash of being so ruthless and like people were attacking her character at our tribal council and they didn't even show all of it. It was actually nasty. Like people really went in on her and her morals. And so I think maybe she was just
leading the charge in terms of that Game Changers jury. Like who are the people that were really upset with her?
I'm trying to think. Oh,
Ozzy
went in, which was weird because I did not expect that from Ozzy. Ponderosa is always so weird because you'll be chilling with these people.
Yeah.
They seem like they don't even care about what's going on.
He was
on
hard
the
on
game.
Parvati on Fans versus Favorites too.
Ozzy during Ponderosa didn't even care what was going on. He just was just there. And then all of a sudden he goes in on Sarah, just attacking her. And then I'm trying to think who else. I have to be honest. Sometimes my Survivor seasons are a little bit of a blur. I think I compartmentalize everything. And so it's this box that when I have to do podcasts, I have to try to remember what happened. But I'm pretty sure Debbie went in.
I
was actually surprisingly, I surprised myself and I cringe afterwards, but I took that very personal and I kind of went in on Sarah too, just because it was just different. I mean, I've been blindsided before, but I've never had someone try like connect with me in such a way that actually was just completely fake. And I think some of that was because Tariq came back and told me that Sarah didn't even like me and was talking shit about me all the time. Oh, sorry. I don't know if I can say that.
Could you sort of just help to, you know, explain the difference between something like that where Boston Rob going back to Redemption Island with somebody that I feel you've talked about this before that you felt like that he was had like a brother sister relationship, like an older brother relationship with you. But ultimately he votes you out in that game. But that didn't feel like as much of a betrayal as something like with Sarah from Game Changers.
It's so tricky because I don't know. Everyone does it, but there's for some reason when some people do it, it just doesn't sting as much. And I think it's because Sarah really went into family and, you know, we would talk about family. We would talk about her son and then she swore on her son. And it was just, maybe it was because, I don't know. Is it a gender? Like maybe it's because like I felt like she was a sister to me. And I know I said that about Boston Rob, but he's older. So it's kind of like, oh, he's like an older brother. But maybe I just felt like I actually bonded even more with Sarah because, you know, I have
still
sisters.
Closer. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I have sisters. And I think that there was also, it was right around the time that we had the loved ones visit. And so there was this emotional moment where my mom brought up the fact that like we lost my other sister. And so I think that was just like an emotional time where, you know, we bonded on this really deep level that connected into family. I was probably feeling emotional because my mom had talked about my sister who passed away. And I think then to be cut shortly after that by what I thought was my number one, for some reason, it just felt like a knife to the stomach. I don't know. I guess maybe just because she took it a couple steps farther, but it's hard to tell for, you know, if you're trying to give advice to future Survivor players, it's like you have to bond with people so they feel safe, but just don't take it too far. I don't know what the line is, but
correct me if I'm wrong. You voted for Sarah to win at the in Game Changers, correct?
I did. Yeah. So I was able to separate. Always able
good,
to do
good
that
for you, Andrea. I mean, I think that a lot of people would not, a lot of Survivor players would not have done that.
Yeah, like I was hurt by her, but I also recognize that she played the best game. I mean, I think she's one of the best Survivor players. And so if it ever sounds like I have any ill will towards her, I really don't. She's good. She's really good.
Yeah. So what have you made of her game so far in this season? Because I really feel like that we've seen maybe, and I'm not the first person to say this, it seems like that we've seen more of that social game coming out in this season than we had in that we got to see in Game Changers.
Well, I think she's been playing great up until giving Nick the reward. That was very bizarre, really, really weird. And it could have cost her the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be on everyone's mind. So we'll have to see. I see her bonding with Sophie, which reminds me of her bonding with me and Aubrey. And the thing is Sarah is really fun.
Yeah.
And they're showing a little bit of that on this season. They didn't really show that on Game Changers and people didn't really understand why we all bonded with her, but she's so fun. And you can see that a little more on Winners at War. So I think she's doing great. I mean, she looks like she's tight with Tony. Looks like she might be tight with Ben. Looks like she has a good bond with Sophie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that she's in a good position, minus the reward fiasco. But because even when her name came up briefly, I was surprised that people wouldn't realize, wait, Sarah's a much more dangerous player than Adam. Mm-hmm. I mean, Adam didn't have anyone. So
yeah.
Why not keep Adam in? You can just keep an eye on Adam. But Sarah, I think, kind of has these stronger bonds formed than Adam. And I'm surprised that I thought maybe taking out Sarah would have been a better move. But I think that the best friend syndrome is happening. And I think a lot of people think Sarah is with them.
Yeah. Just staying with Sarah for one more minute, that I feel like that, you know, Sarah's ability to like do like a kind gesture for somebody to then go back on it. Can you explain, or at least like get you to lower your defenses? So could you explain the wedding ring story with Brad from Game Changers? That do you remember how that played out? She had a ring, but it wasn't really her ring, and she let Brad hold it so that he would trust her, but it wasn't her real ring. Does that sound right?
I'm actually not 100% sure what happened with that. I know that it was pretty smart, though, is that they exchanged rings, mm-hmm. wedding rings, but I didn't know that it wasn't actually her ring. I don't know.
I wish I could remember the story right.
If only you had someone that was on the season here to talk about what happened on Game Changers.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, in fairness, you know, that it's something from when you were out of the game. So I don't know.
Usually, honestly, after I'm out of the game, I kind of am bitter and I just don't want to watch. But
yeah.
No, there was something that she would. They exchanged rings,
yeah.
and then that, which is really smart because mm-hmm.
she also with Ceri, with the did she let Ceri hold the extra vote, which she almost got burned on within Ceri, but as a gesture of goodwill, like I feel like that she does very much. She does do these gestures to people to sort of say, see, I trust you. And then, ends up sort of like opening the door for maybe then down the road she could go back against that if she wants to.
Yeah, and I think it's really smart because it's something tangible that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if Sarah has your wedding ring, you're not going to vote her out.
Yeah. So, and who knows, ultimately, like at the time, it was something that she did for Nick where she felt like, hey, no, I'm just doing something to be nice to Nick. But, you know, it's not beyond her capability to then say, hey, now this is this is a great time to get Nick because he'll never see it coming because I just did something nice for him. Or that, hey, Nick will work with me because he owes me one. So it gives her a lot of options in terms of what she can do. I just think on a new player season, that move is probably going to work better than on a season where everybody already, you know, is sort of suspicious about her.
Absolutely. And I was really surprised there was no follow-up of her and Nick having some sort of conversation about it. I mean, mm-hmm. clearly they must have spoken about it. But I don't know. That's a big question mark. I'm actually really curious to hear from Sarah. I don't know if the cast is even tweeting or if she said anything about it.
Yeah, they're not supposed to. And they just recently were reminded not to be talking about stuff.
That would be maybe my biggest question because I don't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not like her.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting because she mentioned that, yeah, he got blindsided and then also he just got engaged. And then that reminded me of in the original Edge of Extinction where Ron took Gavin on the family reward because then he had just gotten engaged or he just got married right before they went out to go play because I think they moved up his wedding date, if I remember that story correctly. But then Gavin also voted against Ron in that same episode. So I don't really I feel like that would have been fresh in their memory that doesn't buy you that much.
I just don't know why Well, then again, maybe this is why I am not engaged or married, but I'm like, what? I mean, you're on Survivor. So like real life's on pause. Mm-hmm. Birthday doesn't matter. Your engagement doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like those things don't matter.
Yeah. This is why you're not married, because you just say,
they're like, I don't know. I mean, so he got engaged, but guess what? He's on Survivor. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to see his fiance very soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, maybe very soon, because loved ones visit, I believe, is coming up next week.
Oh, wow.
So maybe very soon. So who knows? Maybe is Sarah, you know, I mean, I think that she's such a good player that I just want to give her credit on this. Is she thinking like, hey, let me get another iron in the fire? Nick, I don't have a good relationship with him, but like everybody else thinks I'm their best friend. If Nick wins the family visit, then I might not get a family reward.
I mean, maybe. I think that this is not
every
just
other
a
person
human,
here is already going to take me.
This is not just a human moment, Rob.
Yeah.
It was not. Even if she's just telling us that, mm-hmm. it's Sarah. Like, she yeah. has something up her sleeve.
Okay. All right. Seth wants to ask a question. How has Sarah changed her game since you played with her? Do you notice anything that she's doing differently this season than what you saw in Game Changers?
Well, we haven't really seen that. I mean, we haven't really seen a lot of moves from her yet.
Yeah.
And I think that hopefully that's coming soon. For me, it just seems like she's a little more low key on this season.
Did she ever make you smell her breath or ask to smell anybody's breath in Survivor Game Changers like she did to Tyson?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of her things?
Yeah. Like I'm telling you, like I really truly felt like we were sisters. Like we would smell each other's breaths. We would braid each other's hair. We would just like stay up all night telling stories. And as you know, when you're out there, a day feels like a week. I mean, mm-hmm. truly bond with these people. But yeah, she has that fun, silly side. And we were winning a lot of challenges on Game Changers. So that even bonds you even more mm-hmm. because every time you win, you're like, oh my gosh, I love you.
Yeah.
And you're just so over the moon.
Because you were with her at the original Nuku, right? Mm-hmm. And then you guys got swapped together also?
Yep, to Tavua. And then we got swapped again. So we were with each other the entire time.
Okay. So your entire time in the game. So yeah, you get to know somebody very well throughout that whole course of being together.
Or you think.
That's right. Talk to me about somebody that you've never played with, but somebody that you know more from real life this season. And how do you feel like Sophie is doing in Survivor Winners at War?
Oh, I love Sophie. She is the best. I'm so happy for her. I think she's killing it. I think she's playing a really, really good game. She was the one that steered what last week's vote.
Yeah, she was really big on we got to vote out Wendell.
Yep, she was the one that made that call. I think she's so even keeled, really calm, seems to have really good bonds. And she's so funny. And I got to watch the episode with her all right before lockdown. So it was the mm-hmm. episode right before. It was like the last day before I left.
Yeah.
Where
Rob got voted out.
Yeah. And I just think she's so great. And she was, you know, she was on the season after Redemption Island.
Yeah, you guys played back to back.
Yeah, so I've known her for a while and I always kind of feel bonded with her because we were around that same time. Mm-hmm. You know, the glory years of Survivor, where the Survivor seasons were really at its peak. Yep. Everything else has been just downhill.
Yep. The apex of Survivor, the golden age of
21
Survivor.
21 through 23.
Yes. And don't forget about 24. Don't forget about One World also.
Oh, yeah. 21 through 24.
Yeah, that's really as good as it gets.
But also I was going to say, because Sophie was so, I felt like she was so under-edited on South Pacific, and it's great to see her get more airtime here. And she's just so smart and she's really athletic. So, and I think people forget that she's an athlete. So it's kind of cool to see all aspects of her gameplay.
So I want to ask you about that idea of Sophie being under-edited. Do you think that that was the case, that this was a very similar Sophie that we saw in South Pacific and they just didn't show us her? Or do you think that she's grown a lot since the person that played in Survivor or South Pacific?
It's probably a mixture of both. Mm-hmm. I think that she probably was playing more than they gave her credit for in South Pacific. But, you know, with age comes wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I do think that you kind of grow and you learn. And it's been, it's been a while since the first time she played.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you play one time, then you're like, oh, I get it. And mm-hmm. then you're able to bring more to the table and you're able to usually narrate better as well.
Yeah. She's just somebody also that I have so much respect for her as somebody that I've gotten to talk with about the game, you know, almost every season most of these seasons in between from when she played through now. And she was somebody that always was able to, break down the game so well and come up with new ideas that people hadn't been talking about. So it's just been really fun to get to see her out there and try to be out there and navigate this really crazy season that we have here in season 40.
Yeah, I mean, she's my, well, I have a couple winner picks, but she's up there. Mm-hmm. I think she's probably in my top two.
So we have Sophie and Sarah. They were swapped together to this new tribe, Yara, and they voted against Boston Rob, and it looks like they picked up Ben as an ally there. So do you see any potential red flags here for this Sarah and Sophie relationship? Or do you think that this might be maybe the, the biggest force that people need to deal with in the post-merge game?
I really worry that Sarah is going to turn on Sophie real quick. I think Sarah likes playing with guys or bringing guys to the end like she did in her season. It works for Game Changers, so why wouldn't she do it this season? I think that Sarah knows how smart Sophie is.
Yeah.
And Sarah doesn't want to play with really smart people, so I think she's going to cut Sophie. And I don't want to see it, but that's my prediction. But maybe Sophie's on to Sarah. I know everyone there knows that Sarah's very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do worry more for Sophie than for Sarah here, because I feel like that while Sarah has a lot of other options, that I feel like that Sophie's tightest ally right now might be Sarah, whereas Sarah has Ben, she has Tony, she seems tight with Kim. We've seen her having a relationship with Tyson. And who are the people that Sophie was tight with this season? Yule, who's gone. It seemed like that Adam was somebody where when it came down to in the episode, there was some talk about that somebody was talking to Adam and they said, hey, how about Sophie or Sarah? And Adam was saying, no, Sarah. Oh, she's tight with Ben. He's like trying to, it seemed like, protect Sophie. I just don't know who has Sophie's back here.
I don't really think a lot of people. So Sophie really needs Sarah right now, and Sarah doesn't really need Sophie. So that does make me pretty nervous now.
Yeah, Sarah. I feel like Sarah has a lot of options. Also, Sophie seems like she doesn't really want to work with Jeremy. So that's another person who, after she went after Wendell because he was tight with Jeremy. So I'm just wondering where the people that are going to protect Sophie are coming from.
Yeah, I wonder that too, Rob.
Yeah, so I'm worried.
Now that you pointed it out, I'm really worried for her.
I'm worried about where she's positioned. All right, I want to get your take on Boston Rob from this season, but if you don't mind, Andrea, could I thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast?
Yes, of course.
No, thank you very much.
What if I said no? I refuse.
All right, we'll have to just put it in after the show. But I want to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, our friends over at DC Universe. Andrea, do you watch any comic book shows?
Oh, I think you asked me this last time.
Oh, we did.
No.
Okay. No, not yet. Well, let me tell you then. Let me entice you here. If you're craving some action-packed DC content, watch DC series and movies, read over 22,000 digital comics, and connect with other fans in the highly engaging community forum with DC Universe. They have an amazing lineup of hit original series. Watch the hilarious adult animated series Harley Quinn. Enjoy fan favorites like Doom Patrol, Titans, Swamp Thing, Young Justice, Outsiders, and the new series Stargirl coming soon. Take a walk down memory lane, watch classic series and movies, kick back and relax with remastered animated shows. My son Anthony is very into any Batman animated show. Of course, the newly released animated films are there as well. You get the latest news with the special guests and watch DC Daily and tune into their podcast, DC Universe, available on Xbox, Roku, Amazon Prime Video, Google Play, and the Apple Store, so you can enjoy DC content anytime, anywhere. It's no wonder they call DC Universe the ultimate DC membership. If you can't wait to join, you can get a free 7-day trial plus 15% off your first 3 months with promo code Rob at checkout. Go to dcuniverse.com/join. Use promo code Rob at checkout. Again, that's dcuniverse.com/join and use promo code Rob at checkout. Valid for monthly subscription only. Expires May 31st, 2020. Okay. Boston Rob is back. You and I got to talk about him a little bit last season when he was on the Island of the Idols, but we got to see Boston Rob out there playing this time. Were you impressed that Boston Rob was able to get as far as he did, Andrea?
I really was, because he had one of the biggest targets, mm-hmm. like right off the top. So yeah. I adore him. We've stayed in touch. He's the best. So I'm rooting for him. I really wanted him to get back in when there was the battle back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like if you were out there, you would have worked with Rob? He would have been another person in his corner.
I mean, look, I don't want to be fooled twice by Boston Rob, yeah. because that would be completely embarrassing
same,
and humiliating.
Same.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of like how Boston Rob and Parvati started working together. You'd rather go with the people that you know than these strangers or people that you aren't as familiar with. So I would have initially probably teamed up, but then always making sure I would always make sure that
yeah, like
I
you're
got
not going to go to the end with him.
No.
Right. And I feel the same way, that I feel like that if I was out there on a season with him, like I'd definitely be like, hey, let's keep this guy around for as long as we can.
Yeah. And honestly, after playing with Sarah, I do think that Boston Rob is more trustworthy than Sarah, just because I think he is a little more of the old school mentality where, yes, he will completely backstab you, but he's going to want to try to have a core group for mm-hmm. longer than someone like she would.
Yeah.
And so I think that in a weird way, I think he's actually a better bet than a lot of these winners, especially the new school people, because I feel like new school Survivor, there's a lack of loyalty just on all ends.
Yeah. Okay. This is an interesting thing to talk about, because we saw this back in the first episode where that Rob was talking with, I think, with Danny Boatwright and with Ethan. And then we cut to like where, you know, Jeremy and Ben and Adam are. And Rob says something to the effect of like, see, that's the problem with these new school players, that they don't talk to each other. They don't get to know each other. And Rob was saying, that's what we do as old school players. We get to know each other. Do you think that there's something to that?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, I remember it was different because it was my first time on Survivor, though. But when I first played with Rob, we played a lot of fun games. Granted, the one time he played a game, he actually ran back to camp and found an mm-hmm. idol. So.
Yeah.
How much of it was real? Who knows? But it did feel more of the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, kind of excited to be on Survivor feel. And again, it was my first time on Survivor. But when you play with newer people, or when you're coming back as a returner, it's just all game from mm-hmm. from the top. And you don't really get to know the people as much.
Yeah. Well, I think that part of Rob's game is that in his perfect scenario, like what happened in Redemption Island, you know, he builds up a group of five or six people, and he is a little bit more like a camp counselor. And I think he wants to go into the merge with five or six people and then completely knock off everybody from the other tribe. Whereas I feel like that a lot of people are saying like, okay, who's my one or two people? Okay, and how can I put together, you know, this voting block with, you know, this pair and this pair and this pair, as opposed to, and I'm not necessarily worried about, yeah, this is my tribe right now, but this is not my tribe for the long haul.
Yeah. And I think the old school way to play Survivor was bigger alliances that actually stuck together. Mm-hmm. And it's just so different now. Like, I don't even know if I can fully keep up, because mm-hmm. I actually like having a group of people. I don't know if that's because I started playing Survivor around when that strategy was still happening, but I just like the idea of like having a core of like three or four and then a couple mm-hmm. outliers. That's just how I like playing Survivor, but you have to adapt. And now you have to be willing to work with every single person and not be as focused on having this core alliance.
Where do you think it went wrong for Rob this season?
I just think that he was doomed from the start, because the last season we had a big giant, there's a giant Boston Rob statue.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't recover from that. Mm-hmm. You really can't. And I think that when you look at Survivor, the people that stick out as the top players are Boston Rob, Sandra, Parvati, mm-hmm. you know, I just think that those three are kind of synonymous with Survivor. And
they went out back to back to back in this game.
Yeah, I think I'm actually shocked he went as far as he did. And of course, then his, you know, last ditch effort of the buddy system is just not going to work on these players.
Yeah. And well, talk about did that bring back any painful memories for you to have the buddy system be brought back from Boston Rob? Buddy system on steroids, according to Sarah.
Yeah. Well, the buddy system was the worst because the thing is, when somebody like Boston Rob says we're doing the buddy system, and you have all these people that actually want to work with Boston Rob, like on Redemption Island, you're paired with someone. And of course, I was paired with Philip. So that was a terrible situation. But you have to be with this person the whole time. And if you step out of line, your buddy is going to go tattle on you.
Yes. That's what it was. So it was basically, hey, if you see your buddy talking to some of these Zapateras, you come back and you snitch on them. You'll be saved, but they're going home.
And so there was really nothing you could do, because even if you pulled your buddy aside and said, hey, are we really going to do this? Are we going to do this buddy system? This just feels very constricting. Then guess what? Either way, your buddy is going to tattle on you.
Yeah.
So there was nothing that I could do with this buddy system. And in that sense, it was brilliant of Boston Rob.
So,
but it's not, but it didn't translate to this season.
Yeah.
So we've already seen it happen.
Okay. So with the buddy system, then would there also be like then every day, then you'd have to like have a meeting with Rob Rob would be, Andrea, tell me, did Philip say anything to you about talking to the Zapatera? And then he would be able to read you like he did with Ben, where you'd be like, Andrea, you better tell me the truth.
I mean, the thing that he did that was actually great is he would make it seem like, even though it was his idea, he would make it seem like it was the group effort.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually never, it wasn't, even though people would tattle to him, it wasn't necessarily like he didn't make it seem like he was doing it for himself. He was like, we're doing this for each other, which if you do want to play that really old school way of Survivor where you do have a huge group of people sticking together, it actually really does work. And so if you want to go far in the game, and maybe only make it to a certain point, the buddy system is actually very, very effective.
Yeah.
Because it's so, as soon as you start talking to the other side, someone gets pulled over. It always happens. So in terms of getting our alliance very far, it worked, but it was so horrible because you couldn't do anything. But then Boston Rob also on our first season, and granted, we were all kids and naive. I mean, you had Natalie, who's 19. I was 21. Natalie Chanarelli, Ashley Underwood. And then you had all these people that never watched Survivor.
Yeah.
But he would make it seem like he would throw it out to us and say, who do you want to vote out? So we thought, oh, I suggested Julie or whoever I suggested. And I was like, oh, that was my move. It was like, no, that was not your move.
So Boss Rob would let you pick who got to go home from the other tribe.
Yes. So
okay.
We would kind of think, oh, wow, well, I decided I wanted to take out Ralph Kaiser. Mm-hmm. And so this was my move on my resume.
Yes.
And so he did a really good job of tricking a bunch of naive people.
So I want to ask you about, so you got to play with Philip in season 22 and then you came back and then played with Philip again in Karamoan, and you had a good relationship with Philip from the first time, and you're able to work with him the second time. Can you just talk a little bit about what it's like playing with the same person in different seasons? And we've seen, you know, like Tony and Sarah and a couple other people who've gotten to play with each other. Tyson's played with a few different people. And now you're in a different game with that same person.
It does feel really good because you have that sense of security of like, okay, this is a person I've worked with before. I don't think they're going to gun for me because they don't know any of these other people. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't thrilled to be with Philip again, but I was happy to have somebody I'd played with before. The only problem is then he wanted to play like Boston Rob. And so he was trying to do the same thing Boston Rob did, but we all knew it. And so we were all talking, did Philip say this to you? Okay, cool. He said the same thing to me. Wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And then we had played Survivor so many days together that it was almost like a family member that I couldn't stand.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would wake up and see him wrapped up in the blanket with two pillows and no one else had anything, I would just be fuming. It honestly, I would get so mad at him because we were just at that point had played so many days together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, when I the only other person I've played with, well, Francesca, but that was only for a few days, mm-hmm. and then Malcolm, but we didn't actually meet up on Game Changers. Mm-hmm. And it always depends on your dynamic, because Malcolm, I was kind of not looking forward to playing with because we had been gunning at each other the entire time during Karamoan.
Yeah.
And in Game Changers, I was actually planning on fully wanting to work with him, but I just know that Malcolm doesn't trust me. And so I was afraid that it was going to be really bad if we met up in the game, because even though I wasn't going to go for him, he might go for me. So just the chance that he would go for me, I would actually have to go for him right away.
Yeah.
And so it's just really tricky. It depends on what happened your first season.
Can you talk that through a little bit where, and I just talked to Malcolm the other day. We had a great podcast this past weekend, which I highly recommend people checking out. Malcolm had a lot of really great stories. He had a lot of really great stories about his seasons, but he didn't have too many stories from Karamoan. That's the one season that he didn't really talk about too much. But in terms of, not to say that he didn't like it or anything like that, he just, that wasn't what we talked about. We actually talked a lot about Game Changers and a lot about Denise from in the Philippines. But if you know that you're going to come back and have this type of maybe an awkward situation with somebody, that do you need to get out in front of that and like talk to people before you get out there? Or is it the kind of thing that you can work it out when you're on the beach in a new game with somebody where that you have history from a past game?
I mean, it's so difficult because you never know how much you want to pregame. And now actually it's interesting because Survivor's actually addressed the pre-existing relationships. Yeah. And I think that it's good because we all know each other. We've all been, you know, some people played poker together, some people mm-hmm. dated. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, you know, let's not be in denial that we all have some sort of relationship. Mm-hmm. With Malcolm, I think when we saw each other in LA for, you know, they'll bring us to LA and give you your shots and what is that called? Just like pregame, like before you leave.
Yeah, they'll do some sort of like a, you know, casting.
Finals.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And so for me, I try not to pregame as much as other people mm-hmm. because it comes across really fake. And so if I reach out to someone that I think is rumored to be on a season that I'm going to be on and I just say, hey, how's it going? And act like we both don't know we're going to be on the season. It's weird. But then if you address it off the top and you're like, hey, so are you going to be playing Game Changers? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be playing that season? Then it's too aggressive. And so I decided for Game Changers, I wasn't going to reach out to anyone new. Mm-hmm. The only people that I thought maybe I should say something to was Malcolm because we played together. And so for him, I think we did text a little bit, but nothing was set. Yeah. And I think that I probably do a bad job of pre-gaming because I hear about all these other people that had full packs, like they solid, we're together. And then sometimes they actually go to the end. Like I heard that Sarah and Troyzen and Brad had like a final three deal and then they went all the way to the end. So sometimes you look back and you're like, wait, should I have pre-gamed a lot more? I always kind of lean towards not pre-gaming because I just feel it comes across phony because anyone that reaches out to me before we play Survivor and I haven't talked to them ever, I'm like, okay, it's kind of weird.
I'm with you, but now I'm starting to think that, you know, in these like later seasons where they bring people back, I'm starting to feel like that the people that pregame, maybe that they had the leg up, like there's too many people that are like, I'm not going to pregame. And then maybe that is the way to go.
No, I do think they do have the leg up. I just don't know how to do it. I don't know how to, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how to do it in a genuine way. And even though I am genuine in it, I'm just so worried that it's going to come across phony if I text Malcolm and say, hey, smiley face, let's work together. Like, it's just, I don't really get how to do it. I remember for Karamoan, there was, I wasn't talking to very many people before, but I do remember, what happened? Someone said, I don't know. It was like, we got scolded for pre-gaming and part of me thinks that there was a conspiracy that they wanted certain people to pregame, but not me. I don't know. It just gets all very weird and convoluted.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like that I'd be afraid. I'd be like, well, like other people are doing it and you're going to be left out.
I know. And maybe that was bad on my part for Game Changers. I mean, Game Changers, I didn't talk to really anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, Malcolm, but I knew him and we, you know, we've been friendly outside of the game. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I think we said was, I think I did say it, Malcolm, I promise I'm not going to come for you. Like, just please. Cause I was so worried about him gunning for me for no reason or just because of the past. And I was like, I'll do anything just to prove that I actually really want to play with you. Cause I think Malcolm is just the coolest, funniest guy ever. Mm-hmm. But we also have kind of a brother sister relationship in Karamoan. We were going after each other, but then laughing about it. And that's why I think I actually really enjoyed Karamoan because the people that were coming after me were Eddie Reynolds and Malcolm, who were a blast. Mm-hmm. And so it was just kind of a fun season all around. And it wasn't as dark as, you know, Game Changers or as boring as Redemption Island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. In Survivor Karamoan, you ended up winning individual immunity in the same challenge that we saw last night. Does that bring a smile to your face, Andrea, when you see that your challenge come back?
I love that challenge. And I do. Yeah, it's a good challenge. I remember that when I did it, I think we were up there for 3.5 hours.
Yes.
And
what were they up there, 10 minutes last night?
Yeah, it wasn't very long. However, I will say this. They had rougher waters.
Yeah.
Which makes a difference. And the other thing is on the top of the challenge, we had a little ridge, like a little slat of wood that went down the middle. Mm-hmm. And they had a flat top. And so what I was doing was I took my my big toe and the next toe, and I kind of would clench on that wood in the middle, and it brought me a little more stability and I was able to kind of hold on a little bit. I don't know if Brenda was doing that, but I was able to kind of grip with my toes onto this little wood slat.
Yeah.
They didn't have that. So look, I did balance for 3.5 hours and I could have went a lot longer. The producer said they weren't sure if they were going to have the tribal council out there, mm-hmm. because Brenda and I were not moving at all.
And then you guys went to one leg.
Yeah. Then we went to one leg to make it harder.
Yes.
But I do think if you look at the choppy waters and the design, they had a harder time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know. I like that challenge. I want to take everyone on that challenge.
So how many individual immunity wins do you have?
Four.
And was it three in Game Changers and one in Karamoan? Do I have that right?
I had one in Redemption Island.
Okay.
We were hanging upside down. And then I had one in Karamoan, the doghouse challenge, mm-hmm. and then two in Game Changers.
Yes. Now,
last
night, Kim Spradlin, I believe, won her fifth immunity challenge.
Yeah.
So, Who would be able to last longer on the doghouse? You or Kim Spradlin?
I mean, I don't know. Kim's really good at challenges, but I think that's my challenge.
People forget about it. Oh, okay.
I think that's my challenge, Rob.
Yeah.
I think that's my challenge. She could probably beat me in a ton of other challenges, but I feel confident about the doghouse challenge.
Yeah. Okay.
So Kim actually, I don't think I'm wrong. I think I'm right. Did she beat the record for most female individual challenges?
I think it's weird because that she has four, and I think a few women have gotten four in one season. It seems low to me that five would be the all-time record.
Yeah, but she got five.
But I believe that's now the record.
Yeah, so I think she just beat us because I had four. I think Kelly Wentworth, Chrissy,
Jenna Maraska.
Jenna Maraska. I think maybe Parvati. So yeah, so now she has that record.
Yeah.
As long as no one takes my record of most votes against me in the history of Survivor,
yes,
I'm happy.
Yes, how many is that up to?
All I have left.
Is anybody on your tail this season?
I think Kelly is close to me. She's obviously not
this season.
I think, Kelly, who was on this season. Imagine if I thought Kelly was on this season.
Tyson might be up there. Tyson might be, I don't know where we track this, but Tyson's been voted out now three different times.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, it's my favorite record. It's all I have left.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. I'm sure somebody will update the leaderboard for us on all of that. I want to go back to last week's immunity challenge where we had to see the survivors hold on to the pole for as long as they could. And you, I believe you were making this comment, and a lot of other people were, that similar to how Michelle fell, you had a similar fall in Game Changers on this challenge. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. First off, could you just describe a little bit of what's that like to be up there?
Dude, I was so excited to do this challenge because I've been watching it on Survivor, and
Harvey makes it look so easy.
Yes, I'm good at these type of challenges. This was horrible. It hurts so much. It's a tiny little ridge that you're balancing your toes on. It only takes up about half your toe. So you're balancing on half of a toe, and it hurts so much. And I was in it. I lasted pretty long, and it was the most pain I think I've ever been in on a Survivor challenge.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at Ty, who is just hanging out, living his best life, and Ozzy, who was also not really moving. And I'm like, you know what? It pains me, but I can't do this anymore. And so, I just tried. I really wanted to win that challenge, and I couldn't do it. So I was all the way at the top. And I was in so much pain that the idea of sliding down the pole and stepping onto another ridge would have been, I just couldn't do it. So I just decided to drop. Now, when I was younger, when I grew up on the farm, like I would always be jumping off of barns and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I know how to land. And so I was like, you know what? I can do this. And so I just let myself fall off. And then I landed and got back up.
Yeah. Was it sand?
It was sand, yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't raining. You didn't have bad weather like these survivors did, right?
No, yeah. We were in the sun, so it wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
Something I will say too. So the challenges have all been changed over time. Not all of them, but some of them have been adjusted. And they told us on Game Changers that pole challenge, they actually made the ridges where you stand a little... What are they called? Just the
grooves? Right,
yeah. The grooves or whatever. Yeah. They've actually made the grooves a lot smaller over time. Yes. So if you go back and you look at
they don't want to be out there all day.
Yeah. So exactly. So if you look back at the earlier iterations of the challenge, those little grooves are a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And so you can have maybe half a foot on it. And so when you see, and granted, Parvati clearly kills that challenge, but when you see her just hanging out and thriving.
Yeah.
It's actually an easier version. Mm-hmm. Still hard, still very hard. Difficult, yeah. But it's interesting because when you do the harder version, you're like, you want there to be some sort of disclaimer. This one's harder, you know, because you can't last as long.
Mm-hmm. Felipe Shimon says, should they lower the polls on that immunity challenge? The last three times they've done it, you and Michelle both took hard falls and Jen Brown got stung by a bee in a sensitive area. I don't know if that has anything to do with the height, Felipe.
I don't think it does.
Is that challenge just too dangerous?
I mean, do bees only fly at a certain
altitude?
Height?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, personally, I chose to fall off and in that way, just because I knew that I could probably land and it would be less painful.
Yeah.
As a viewer, you like to see people higher up on the poles.
Could they do it in the water? Why do they have to do that on land? Is it too hard to like get the pole embedded in the water?
That might be difficult to get it in the water, but that is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. Let me ask you about Michelle a little bit and where she's at, because I think that she's a very important figure, even though she's very much on the bottom right now. When I was rewatching Tribal Council today, I noticed that one of the key people that everybody was whispering to was Michelle. And I really couldn't wrap my head around why, based on what we've seen in the episode, because it seems like that the vote was sort of like, OK, should we do Nick or Michelle? That was the talk. But I saw Michelle whispering with a bunch of different people, and it seemed like the people were going to her, that she seemed like very involved in all of these conversations. So I would love to hear from you. Is Michelle more involved in what's going on based on where she is in the game right now?
I think she is. I think that she was left out of the Wendell vote because people knew she had a relationship with him.
They had kicked it.
Yeah, they kicked it. Oh my gosh, that also, I can't believe that she was stuck on an island with her ex. That I'm good friends with Michelle outside of, actually, we never even played Survivor together, but we're good friends in real life. And I just can't believe that she had to play Survivor with an ex-boyfriend. It would be terrible. I would hate it.
Yes.
But oh yeah, but I think so. She was left out of that vote because of that reason. But she does have a really good social game. I know everyone talks about having a great social game, but she really does. And I think that
she's
she's very charismatic.
Don't always get that.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of the people want to go to the end with Michelle.
Okay.
I do.
Why?
I think that because I think, unfortunately, with her season with Aubrey, a lot of people didn't think, you know, it was very controversial. But I think that a lot of people will see Michelle and think, okay, I might be able to beat Michelle, but I can't beat Tony.
Yes.
I could beat Michelle over Tyson. I could beat Michelle over Jeremy, over Ben.
So do your two friends, Michelle and Aubrey, ever ask you, okay, Andrea, decide who do you like better out of the two of us?
Oh my gosh.
Settle it once and for all.
Even.
Okay.
No, that's what's really hard is those two are totally fine.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're totally fine. There's no beef there, but it is kind of interesting because I am very close with Aubrey and I'm very close with Michelle. I love them both. They're both incredible people and they are so different. Mm-hmm. They are just opposite sides of the coin. It's really interesting. But I adore both of them. No, there's no fight. They're never, if they ever made me choose, I'd be like, all right, I won't be friends with either of them.
You'll pick Julia Sokolowski.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I think a lot of people want to play with Michelle and she does have this great energy. I mean, you see it in real life. The girl's organizing Zoom calls with like 20 survivors and, you know, very social. She's always involved in the survivor community and I don't know. She has the energy for it. I definitely don't.
Okay. I won't ask any follow-ups about these Zoom calls that I don't know anything about. I'll save that for another day.
Do you want to come to the next one?
I don't know. But you know, it's like, hey, don't tell Rob, whatever you do. But Andrea, go back to where Michelle was offered this deal for, or a quote unquote deal for, the 50-50 idol for 4 fire tokens.
Yeah, this kind of goes back to why I'm not crazy about all the fire tokens and the twist, because I don't even care that much.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, okay, so 4 fire tokens for a 50-50 chance and you get to play it at tribal. Like I'm already kind of checked out,
it's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. I'm like, come on. But I would say I think she made the right decision because you don't know if you're going to even make it past the next tribal council. She was on the outs of the last vote. It's not the best deal. And in fact, it's actually kind of a terrible deal. But I think that at her, where she is in the game, she has to play vote to vote. And I think it'd be better to have a shot at saving yourself than absolutely nothing. And then you're sitting on 4 fire tokens, not knowing when the next deal could come about.
Okay, let me ask you this question from one of our listeners. Mike Doskis says, what do you think about Michelle perhaps being able to play her coin idol after the votes are read? From what was shown from the rules of the idol and what Michelle read, it's a possibility, parentheses, although I realize we don't see everything. If this is the case, do you think that the idol was worth 4 fire tokens that she spent? So I don't know this for sure, but if it is hypothetically where that it's a 50-50, but it's like the Tyler Perry idol where, okay, Michelle, the tribe has spoken, but she can pull out the coin to, but not before we flip the coin and the coin goes up. And then if it's safe, now Michelle's not voted out.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that it wasn't more clear in when exactly you play it, because that was my question. I don't think it's going to be after, or I think that would have been in the description. So I guess basically she has to play it, what I think is after everyone votes and before they're read. Is that what you're thinking?
I'm not sure. I mean, that's what I was thinking before I read Mike's question. I mean, I think that it's definitely more valuable if it can be played after the votes.
Well, yeah. I mean, then it's definitely worth it, I think, because because then you can sit on it for a while. And this is my question, too. Is the coin the idol?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Because at first I thought she had to bring the coin to tribal council and at any point flip it.
Yeah.
She gets an idol and then she can play it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And does she get to flip it or does Jeff get to flip it?
I think she gets to flip it. Yeah. That only seems fair.
That only seems fair. Unless she has a bad throw and like throws it off the set.
I know. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was a lot of fire tokens. You know, if it was only a one or two, I think it's a no brainer. You have to do it. But I was saying this last night. Could she do more with those four fire tokens of like, you know, say to somebody, you know, could if I give you a fire token after every tribal council, could you keep me safe for this one?
Yeah.
Would that be could more she, of a sure thing?
Yeah. Or could she... I mean, can she just offer her fire tokens to people to keep her? Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess you're right. That would be actually better, I would think.
I don't know.
Would you? Okay. So if you are in a position.
Yeah.
Do you take it or not?
I think that, you know, it's easier to say don't take it from being on a podcast. I think if you're out there and you have the advantage in front of you, I think you probably end up doing it. But
especially if you get the fortune cookie and it tells you.
Yes. Do you think that the fortune cookie had a lot to do with the decision?
You know what I think was a missed opportunity is if they would have put an idol clue in the fortune cookie.
Yes.
And then they all opened up their cookie and had to read it all out loud. It would have been so fun to see someone have to make up a different fortune cookie instead of the idol is under the whatever.
Well, would it have said the idol or would it have said like, you know, treasure awaits you in a place that, you know, where new messages lie or something like that's like kind of vague enough, but that's like, oh, the light bulb went off that's actually this clue. Because I feel like that's what they were going to do. But ultimately, that's not how it turned out.
I think that either way, I also think it would be just hilarious if it was like the idol is under the blanket you are sitting on.
Yeah,
like
yeah, would, no, that's,
and
that's,
then like, and then oh, on the spot, yeah.
Kim, what did yours say?
And then you have to be like, kindness is more valuable than wealth. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to make something up like on the spot. I think that was such a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Well, they've done Chinese food reward two seasons in a row. So I wonder if maybe that could be coming back at some point where they do what you're talking about. I think that would be very fun. We'll see. But I think Michelle is not necessarily at the bottom. I don't think that she's anybody's target right now.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. And I mean, like I said, I don't think the players out there view her as the biggest threat right now. And she's very go with the flow. She's really fun. She is kind of down for whatever direction I think the game is going. And people want to work with people. Like, people like that. And you can tell a lot of people are kind of scared of Nick, say that he's wishy-washy and dangerous, or they're scared of Sarah, or Tony's this big target. And I think Michelle is just easier to work with. And that's why I think that a lot of people will want to work with her.
Andrew, are you surprised that the women haven't gotten together to have some sort of more like we've seen like Sarah is talking with Sophie and Kim is tight with Denise and Sarah and has had conversation with Sophie. I mean, isn't this Kim's thing that she did so well in Survivor One World? It seems like that Michelle is like not really being approached by too many of the other women that are out there. And we're at a point where there's five women that are still in the game and five men.
Yeah, I actually thought about that. I thought, why isn't Kim trying to take Michelle under her wing? Mm-hmm. And unless they're not showing us that, I mean, they could be happening, but they might just not have made the edit. But I would think that the girls would want to team up, especially someone like Kim who likes working with women and Michelle who likes working with women. I am surprised that we're not seeing more bonding. I don't really know why.
Yeah, it seems weird that Michelle's sort of just like left out right now. It seems like the only woman that Michelle has a relationship in the game with is Denise.
I mean, I haven't seen Michelle really have a conversation with Sarah or Sophie or Kim, really.
Do Michelle and Sophie have any sort of a existing relationship coming into the game from both being sort of in the tri-state area?
Not that I'm aware of. Yeah, I don't think I've ever been anywhere where those two were together. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know if they have any sort of connection. I don't think so.
Okay. Just to go back to Adam one more time before we dive into some more of these questions. Did you think Adam's play at Tribal Council was going to work? Did you think when Adam talked about the fleur-de-lis that was on the podium, did you think it was going to be real?
I wanted it to be real. I mean, I think I was I think I was 50-50 when he made the move to go there. Mm-hmm. I honestly, there was a part of me that really thought it was going to work. And I wish it would have. This is the thing. I feel you've probably talked about it before. I've mentioned this before, but why wouldn't they hide an idol at tribal council?
Yeah.
Now you can't make it a thing because then it's going to be really distracting and people are going to start looking for the idol at tribal council, mm-hmm. but maybe just for one season. Yeah. And then Jeff can have a conversation with everyone afterwards and be like, all right, that was the only idol at tribal council. Don't even look again. That was fun. Okay. Back to business as usual. But I just think it's about time. And so I was hoping that it would have been an idol. I also was hoping, and I don't really like producer interference ever, but when Adam was giving those confessionals about it, I'm like, come on, producers, just put an idol in there. Like, it's just give him, just give him that. It would be
swap
epic.
It out. And I don't remember this from earlier in the season. Did they change up the tribal council set at all? Or did Adam just like talk about it in this episode? Like, has Adam been looking at that thing the whole season and saying, hey, if all hell breaks loose, I've got an idol at tribal council waiting for me?
Well, interesting. Didn't he say, he said something about when he noticed it, right?
It's made it seem like that he noticed it at this last vote. Something that but he also retweeted today that in Survivor South Africa that they had a thing where an idol really was on the podium. There's also been in Australian Survivor where idols have been hidden, in the voting booth or behind where the torches are. So that Adam is such a super, super duper fan that he's seen these things, the idols hidden at international versions. I'm sure it was very much in his head going into the season. So he was maybe he's ahead of where U.S. Survivor is.
Yeah, well, I remember when he was in the voting confessional, I think that he actually was looking around in that area when he was leaving. So I think he's been kind of looking. Mm-hmm. I was really happy that he gave it a shot.
Yes. Andrea, I know that you and Adam also share something in common. You both love playing in live action Survivor games that do not take place in Fiji. Would you make a pregame alliance with Adam if you and him were ever going to be in the same live action Survivor game?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. You have to watch each other's backs. You guys are the Survivor players.
What's actually kind of funny is I've played a few of them, but mm-hmm. I've actually had people reach out to me and try to pregame with me about these day-long Survivor games.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Where does Adam do them?
He does them all over the place.
Yeah. I mean,
he loves Survivor.
Fun.
Yeah.
My best game ever was Survivor Brooklyn South.
Survivor Brooklyn, where you played with Zeke.
Oh, yeah, Brooklyn. Right? Yeah. There's Survivor Brooklyn, and then there's Survivor Brooklyn South.
Okay.
So Survivor Brooklyn, it was my best game ever. I found two idols, played them correctly. I blindsided everyone. Sophie, I blindsided her.
Okay.
And I think she voted for me to win, but she actually gave me a really harsh jury speech. She was like, what did she say? I wish I could remember. And she was something like, Andrea, where are we? And I'm like, I don't know. The park.
Brooklyn. Yeah.
And then she said something. Oh, man. It was like, oh, no, I'm going to have to look it up. It's on YouTube. Okay. It was something that just made me look. It was funny. She was like really playing into being bitter.
So do you think that if Sophie ends up on the jury, we could see a very bitter Sophie on this? She will play up how angry she is at the final tribal council.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah,
man, I wish I could find that. It was actually a really good jury speech.
Yeah, I could see that because I feel like that Sophie is ready to chew me out like on a good day when I haven't even upset her.
Yeah, I mean, she was just joking, but
yes. Yeah. I could see it. All right. So let me ask you a question from Jacob Brabant, who says that having played with four of these winners in the past, whose game has changed the most since when you played and who are you most impressed with? Okay. So now that includes you've played with Sarah, you've played with Rob, you have played with Sandra, and are we counting Tony also?
Yeah,
I mean, you were on a plane with him once.
Yeah, I didn't really interact with Tony.
Yeah, have you ever interacted with Tony?
I think a little bit at my finale, but not as much as I would like to. Tony is one of my favorite Survivor players.
Yes.
He is pure joy. I just love watching him. I just think he's so funny. So I didn't play with Tony, but if we're counting him, I think that Tony's changed his game up a lot because he's not even really being perceived as this huge threat.
Yeah.
And he also has this really sweet, gentle side to him.
Yeah.
When he's talking with some of the people after they come back from tribal council, he's like a little buddy.
Yeah.
I just think he's kind of showing this like really sweet side, but also the fun side, the whole ladder ordeal, the spy shack came back. I mean, Tony is just Survivor gold. Like, he's just so funny.
Andrea, when you were in the Ponderosa in Survivor Game Changers getting ready to play, and was Tony acting odd at all, where you could tell he was like jumping out of his skin and ready to start going crazy once he hit the beach?
Oh, yeah, he was. You could tell he was freaking out. He was one of the people that's like pacing back and forth, very jittery, like ready to go. I mean, I think that he was one of the people that I was most scared of going into Game Changers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would have.
But watching him this season, I would want to align with him. I just think he seems a little more stable.
Yeah.
And you can kind of work with him a little bit more. So I think he's actually changed his game up the most. Everyone else kind of seems similar. I mean, Sandra actually changed her game up, but not in a great way.
Yeah. How so?
She was trying to, because when she tried to make that big move with Denise, that's so unlike Sandra. Usually she's just kind of chilling, anyone but me. And then she wanted to make this big move and then it totally bit her.
See, I felt like that she really was making a lot of big moves in Game Changers. I feel like that the change in Sandra's game really happened in between the second time she won and when she came back in Game Changers.
That's true. That's a really good point. She was actually kind of running things in Game Changers, and that was very different than what we saw previously.
Yeah.
All right, I stand corrected, Rob.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to... if anything, I thought she was trying to get back to the original Sandra a little bit more in this game and then got away from it.
Yeah, until the end with the Denise thing.
Yeah. Let me ask you from Eric Crow, who is talking about how Malcolm the other day, he told the story, like his origin story with Denise, about how there was one night in the Philippines where they were in a boat that like was flipping over because the storms were so bad. Andrea, do you have any war stories that were especially crazy or interesting that people at home wouldn't know about? Like, did you have any sort of like intense moments from your three times playing Survivor that didn't make the show?
Yeah, well, on Redemption Island, so when I got voted out the first time, I went to Redemption Island and everyone was really mean to me. Mm-hmm. They were very mean.
Ralph and wouldn't let you sleep in the shelter on Redemption Island.
Yeah, I was sleeping in the dirt, basically underneath them.
Yeah.
And fun times. But it's funny now because Ralph and my dad are really good friends. Mm-hmm. Like always, they like hang out and stuff. It's very bizarre. But there was a time where I think it was me, Matt Elrod, maybe Mike Chisel and Grant were all at Redemption Island at the same time. Yeah. And yeah, because that was the final duel. And everyone was going up on this big rock and the waves were crashing on the rock. And then the helicopter was circling, taking aerial shots. And so one by one, I think the producers were telling us, go out there and stand there and it'll be a really cool shot. And so we were all doing that. First, we all went together and then the guys did it. And then I went out there and all the guys went back to camp and probably were going to make rice or something. And so I'm standing on this huge rock and the helicopter's going around. I'm looking off into the distance, feeling strong and powerful. And all of a sudden, the biggest wave ever comes and crashes on the rock. It completely takes over me. I fall down. I'm sliding into the water. My entire side is scraped up. I'm bleeding. I'm crawling my way up onto the rock and I make it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I almost died. Like I almost went into the ocean and I could have hit my head. By this time, the helicopter was gone.
Yeah.
So
they didn't have the shot.
I didn't have the shot. I walk back on the beach and I'm all scraped up and I go to the guys and I say, I almost died, you guys. This wave took me out. Look at it. I'm bleeding.
Yeah.
And they did not care. I mean, sure. Oh, are you okay? Okay. And I just remember thinking, wow, I went from feeling like the coolest person ever to actually almost dying because mm-hmm. it was really dangerous. It was this really big rock and it was slippery and went down into nothing. And there was like rocks below. And it's funny because years and years later on Game Changers, I ended up talking to the pilot that was flying that day. And somehow it came up. He's like, yeah, we actually had we have a video of you falling.
Yes.
And it didn't make the show. But you know, it's like, I'll have to try to get it to you. So I got to follow up. But that was a moment that was pretty scary for me. And then there was another time on Redemption Island where I got really, really sick. And after eating cake on a reward, it was the challenge
cake.
I won. The chocolate cake that was all over my face. There's memes of it online.
Yeah.
And I had so much cake that I was... This is the worst I've ever felt physically. And I remember just laying face down before tribal council, face in the mud, couldn't move. And they did actually give me medication because I think I was like somehow like blacking out from this cake. My whole body was like going in shock. It was it was terrible. Yeah.
Oh no. And nobody could tell when you were face down in the mud where the chocolate ended and where the mud started.
Yeah. Why was I face down? I don't know, but that's what I remember. Yeah. I remember just like so miserable that I didn't even have the strength to turn over.
Oh my God.
It was the worst I ever felt. Yeah.
And we know that you don't have the best experience on rocks on Survivor. Another time that you fell down walking on the rocks. Be very careful, Andrea.
I know. I'm always tripping.
that's a harrowing story.
It was just crazy because I was the only one that fully lived it. Like, no one else saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the pilot
did.
I thought
you were making it up, probably.
Yeah, I mean, the pilot just left me there. Mm-hmm. I don't even understand why they wouldn't radio in and say, hey, that girl just fell, almost went into the water, was like crawling her way back up. Honestly, when I was crawling my way back up, I felt like I was fighting for my life.
Yeah.
And like nobody cared. And that was what was so funny. I mean, I was laughing about it afterwards. I'm like, wow, I almost died and no one cared. Mm-hmm.
Turn the chopper around. We don't have the shot. We lost it. She fell. All right. Nick Snow wants to know, how do you feel about Rob using the term middle school women for Sophie, Kim, Denise, and Sarah as someone played during the someone who played during the middle school era, of course. Now, I don't mean that in any sort of derogatory way, but I have called the foursome of Sophie, Kim, Denise, and Sarah the middle school women, in that we had the old school. And then we have the new school people who are at the bottom. And I've said that I think the people that are in the best position might be the women that are from middle school. But I'm not saying that they're like eighth graders or anything like that. And would you classify yourself as a middle school woman?
I feel like you're just digging a deeper hole, Rob.
Yeah, I'm making it worse.
I think you got to come up with a different term.
It's funny. Right. I understand that it's that there is a middle school, but I'm not saying that they're like they're playing like they're from seventh grade.
Yeah, but just the middle school women is just not. I think it's
the middle school guys are in a good spot too. The people that played in the 20s.
Let's see. Old school, new school, medium school is not
medium
great.
School.
Medium school.
Yeah.
Mid school.
Well, I really
mid school might be okay.
I think that the people that are sort of like positioned where, like, if you were in this season, you'd be another one of these people that, you know, the people that played in the middle of Survivor, that they weren't targeted as being part of the old school, and the people that are on the bottom, who is it? The new school people of Adam, Michelle, and Nick, and it's the people who played in the 20s. Those are the people that are in the best spot right now.
Yeah, I think I would be a middle school woman.
Yeah,
I think so.
You'd be right there with middle school guys like Tony. Tyson is kind of he's technically old school, but he's really the beginning of middle school.
Yeah, no,
Ben
I would
is new
be...
school, but that he hangs out with the middle school people.
Yeah, the new school people are a little too fast for me. Mm-hmm. I definitely identify with being in middle school.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Okay. Let's see. What else? Okay. Oh, Isaac Christensen wants to know, can we get some behind the scenes on your interview with Don Cheadle? that did. Do you have a good story from interviewing Don Cheadle recently?
Oh, well, I mean, the interview is going to go on our show.
Okay. This is a spoiler. This is going to come out tomorrow.
No, not really. Yeah, this is coming out tomorrow. So it'll be on our show on Friday. So people now on people's Twitter at actually 1 p.m. Eastern time is when we moved to for doing this digitally. Mm-hmm. But I think he's talking about, we're doing all of our interviews on Zoom.
Yes.
And at the end of each interview, we're supposed to do a few questions that's just People TV is doing a compilation of celebrities answering what they're doing at home. And so I asked Don Cheadle, okay, what's a new hobby that you've picked up while being in isolation? And he said, heroin. But it's funny because I didn't hear him right. And I thought he said, caroling. And then
caroling.
And Regina Hall was also on the call. And when he said heroin, we both don't say anything for about 3 seconds. She tilts her head and I say, well, what'd you say? And he goes, heroin. And then we start laughing. And then Regina says, oh, you were doing that before. She's talking about what you picked up while in isolation. So it was a funny thing. Had to be there or see it on my Insta story. But it was actually, it was really funny. So yeah, Don Cheadle just made a joke about doing heroin.
And Isaac and a couple other people wanted to know if you are giving away any of the dogs. Now, Isaac is in Wisconsin and he says, also, are all of your puppies spoken for? Because I'm in the market for a yellow lab. How cool would it be to have one of Andrea's dogs? Another one of our listeners, Rudy, wants to know, can I have a puppy? Are all of the dogs staying on the farm or are you looking for homes for the dogs?
They're actually already spoken for.
Spoken for.
Yeah, they go really fast. I'm sorry. Who is Isaac? Or who is
okay, Isaac
next
and Rudy,
time,
yes.
I'll give you a heads up.
Next time. Okay. Are you guys expecting to do this again sometime soon?
It's never fully planned, but usually each summer we'll have puppies, we have baby horses.
Yeah.
Yeah, the farm kind of just erupts in a lot of babies. So okay. It's a nice time.
This is a question from a couple of our listeners asked some version of how do you feel like Cochran would have done if he played on this season? Of course, you played with Cochran and Karamoan came back and he won. Did not want to play for Survivor season 40.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking about this. I'm pretty close with Cochran still, and he doesn't want to play again, which is interesting because he's a huge Survivor fan before he played. But I don't know. I think he would have done well. I don't think with this group of winners, I don't think he sticks out as the biggest target.
Yeah.
I think he would have been freaking out.
Yeah.
I think it would have been overstimulating for him. And I think it would have been hard for him to keep calm, honestly.
So
it's probably great for his sanity to not do this season.
So I think that he would have done very well if he was on the tribe with Sophie and Yule. And I think he would have been the first one out if he was on the tribe with Boston Rob.
Yes. I mean, he definitely would have bonded with Sophie and Yule. He's close with them. There's certain people he really would have bonded with. But then there's others that I don't think he would have really liked Ben very much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he would have really bonded with Parvati or Danny. Like he's a interesting guy. Like I just think there's certain people that are able to bond with him and he likes, but he doesn't like everybody. And so I think it would have been hard with some of the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he would have had the Adam spot.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that he's probably one of the first people that Jeff called because Jeff loves.
Surprised they didn't shut it down when he said no.
I know. I mean, I wish that I could see him play again because I just think he's so funny and I just, yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question from, let's go back to the puppies one more time. What's more chaotic, early merge voting or a fresh litter of puppies at home? Are there any similarities?
I mean, a fresh litter of puppies aren't moving too fast.
Mm-hmm.
They can barely open their eyes. So I would say probably early voting for Survivor.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing more chaotic than trying to save yourself and not be the name that's thrown around.
Do you have that as a back pocket analogy if you ever go play Survivor again?
What
Jeff Survivor, the game is like having a litter of puppies. Everybody's running around with their eyes closed. They can barely see, but, you know, they're trying to find
that nipple.
Yeah.
They're trying to find.
I didn't want to say it. Yeah. But yeah, you got that now.
I know. I mean, I'm someone that never has those analogies that make the edit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking for new ones. So thank you. It's okay. A good one.
But file that one away. Get like a legal pad and then you can go.
I mean, aren't the analogies getting more and more ridiculous? I can't think of any off the top of my head.
I don't think they've had a lot this season. I think they've gotten away from it.
I know that there was a couple. I wish I could.
Sophie
remember
has done a couple.
Sarah has done a couple.
Yes. Like, she said the game is like a bowl of spaghetti.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, because you don't know where one noodle ends and the next one begins.
I know. I just feel like everyone knows that the producers love those analogies. Mm-hmm. And so they're just trying to come up with new ones. I don't think I've ever done one Survivor analogy.
Do one now. So what is the game like, Andrea?
It's like a litter of fresh puppies, yes. Rob.
Well, what's it like at your house being back home with everybody? Do you have any analogies for that?
It's like... Oh, I know. This is an analogy. It's like me interviewing the cast of Tiger King. Oh. You don't know who's telling the truth.
Did you? Have you interviewed the cast of Tiger King?
So, yeah, I've been interviewing the cast, okay. And it's been an experience. So I interviewed Jeff and Lauren Lowe.
Okay.
I interviewed Saf.
Not their babysitter.
Okay. I interviewed Saf, who lost his arm.
Yes.
And then I interviewed Joshua Dial, who was
the campaign manager.
Yes, who was there when Travis shot himself.
Yes.
And it's been crazy because they're telling me about what it was like to be there with all of this. And honestly, all of their stories, like nothing lines up.
Yeah.
Like some people are accusing Joe Exotic of killing 100 tigers. Some people say they never saw any abuse. Some people are saying Jeff Lowe's the bad guy. Some people are saying it's crazy. And it's been really challenging as a host because I don't know the tone of the interviews because you know what I mean? Like
it's like, hey, it was wacky Tiger King. Oh, but then it's talking about murder and all these like felonies.
Well, because you're so excited about the show, because I mean, I don't know if you obviously watched it.
I have a podcast with Bryce about it. We got into it, and we're very excited for the next episode to come out.
It's so good. Like it's so compelling. And so I'll be very excited to talk to these people. Yeah. And I can't believe that it's my job that I get to talk to the Tiger King people. And then all of a sudden I'm talking with Joshua Dial about the details about this suicide he witnessed. And
Travis.
Joshua Dial is not okay. I mean, he completely broke down on the interview. And then I was asking if he's getting help. Like, is there anything we can do? Like, I've never experienced this sort of challenge hosting because I don't know. You don't want to be laughing about Joe Exotic not singing his own music. And then the next question is about tigers dying. So it's been really wild to do those interviews.
Now, are you one side? Are you team Carol Baskin? Are you team Joe Exotic? Are you above picking sides in this?
I'm not really picking any sides because I think that they should all go to jail.
Yeah.
I really do think that they're all guilty of something.
Yes.
Carol Baskin definitely killed her husband. That's so obvious. I think that Joe, you know, I think he did kill a lot of tigers and I grew up on a farm. And so when people hear, oh, he killed, sometimes you do have to put animals down if they're sick and dying and suffering.
Sure.
And so that's a fact of a farm, of a zoo. But I think that there was probably some abuse going on. And also the fact that there was all these drugs going on and he was
a lot of impressionable young men, ended up getting access to a lot of like illegal substances and guns and a lot of stuff, shady stuff going on.
I mean, the drugs are powerful. You convinced two straight men to marry you.
Yeah. Andrea.
So anyway, so that's what, that would my analogy be. It would be Survivor's just like Tiger King.
Right. Your family, you guys have all these puppies, you're breeding horses. Have you guys considered breeding big cats?
No, I don't want anything to do with that.
Opening a sanctuary.
No way. Okay. Not after watching Tiger King. I will never pose with a tiger
baby,
again.
With a baby tiger.
You know what's crazy though? Is so for on our show a couple years ago, we had some animal experts on and they brought on little baby tigers, I think they were. And they were using these tigers as a way, you know, education about preserving them in the wild. I don't really know all the details, but they brought on these baby tigers onto our set. And the next day after our show aired this segment, we got, I think, hundreds and hundreds of emails about our show promoting, you know,
Carol Baskin.
It was.
Yes.
It was Carol Baskin.
Carol effing Baskin.
Yeah. So 3 years ago, Carol Baskin unleashed her followers and fans onto our show about the tigers. And honestly, that was at a time.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. I got to tell you about what Andrea is doing.
And I mean, that was also kind of before we even realized, oh yeah, maybe we shouldn't be having these animals on. It's, I think a lot of people think, oh, they're just these cute tiger cubs.
And we're
talking about, you know, saving tigers in the wild. So we didn't really think about it like that. And now after that, after Carol Baskin's wrath, we don't have animals on our show anymore.
Okay. All right. But you have not worked, talked to any hitman or anything. You're not trying to see that, bring your own justice to Carol Baskin, right?
No. I didn't know that it was her until our booker told us after the documentary came
out. There's not a rivalry between people now and Carol Baskin and the big cat. I forget what they call her thing.
Oh, big cat rescue. Sanctuary? Yeah. I mean, maybe there will be now that people, because people just had Tiger King on their cover. Joe Exotic is on People Magazine's cover.
It's what he always wanted.
It's everything he wanted.
Yeah. Mike Zahn wants to know, how many fire tokens to reveal how you flew on a broomstick? This was another great piece of Instagram content from Andrea. Flying around on a broom on Instagram.
So how many fire tokens to reveal how he did it?
Yes.
10 fire tokens. 10 fire.
That's a lot.
So once I get those tokens, I will explain how we did it.
Okay. Laura ED wants to know, is Andrea coming for anyone and are they ready? An allusion to, you better get ready.
They're coming for you.
Actually, who's coming?
It actually says they're coming to you, which I think shouldn't it be for you? No.
They're coming to you live from my apartment.
Rob, I'm not kidding. It goes, I think the lyrics are, now that you're in it, what will you do? Then what's the next one?
Keep your eyes open.
They're coming to you. I'm not kidding. Okay. I'm not kidding. So, okay, unless Hannah sent me the wrong audio file.
Yeah, she sent me the same thing too. Well, this is a great tease. She's going to be on the feedback show this weekend. We'll explore everything about the brand new hit Survivor song this weekend.
But it doesn't make sense that they're coming to you. Mm-hmm. So maybe she found a different audio file of the song.
Maybe she found the rejected one.
Yeah, because why would it be they're coming to you? But maybe. I was going off of the file that she sent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think people even know. She did an Instagram takeover and Rob and I sang the song on our Instagram takeover.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that this weekend on the feedback show with Hannah. This is a question for you from Tommy Guam. Is Andrea supporting Eliza Orland's campaign for Manhattan District Attorney? And does she want justice for the lost idol?
You told a great story
your last time on the podcast about how you had your hidden immunity idol from Survivor Karamoan that went back in Ghost Island. And then you went to a party at Eliza Orland's house and then it was lost on the New York City streets.
It was lost. Yeah, I must have fell out of my bag or my pocket unless someone at the party stole it.
OK, well, if only we had a district attorney working on the case.
Of course I'm supporting Eliza. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how she does it. I mean, she told me she was running for office and I was like, what? I can't even take care of my plants. Like, I don't know how she does. Honestly, all my plants are dead, unfortunately, because I came to Wisconsin. But I really admire her and everything she's able to do. So make sure you check her out.
Okay.
Check her out.
Steve Chung wants to know, who is the better juggler, you or Dan Foley? And how do you develop a refined juggling skills? Many of us in isolation would like to practice. So you recently you did a video where you were juggling. I didn't know that you were a juggler.
Yeah, I love juggling.
Yes.
I didn't know that Dan Foley was.
Yes, I think that I don't think he ever did it on Survivor also. Have you juggled all your life?
Yeah. So my dad taught me. Mm-hmm. My dad taught me. And then I went to school for acting and we actually had a class that was all about juggling. Mm-hmm. So I was able to work on it there as well. But yeah, juggling's fun. It's weirdly therapeutic for me.
Yeah.
I'm starting to learn skills. It's great for isolation. It's actually, a few people have asked me to do a tutorial. So maybe this is the inspiration I need to do a little tutorial on my Instagram.
Okay. Yeah, because my son asked me the other day, he said, Dad, how do you juggle three balls if you only have two hands? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't juggle.
Well, I'm starting to learn how to do four.
Four?
Yeah.
What about bowling pins? Can you do that?
No, I can't do that.
All right.
Where did Dan Foley juggle?
I think that he has it in his bio that he was a juggler.
Interesting.
Yeah. He does come across as a juggler.
So does Debbie apparently. Oh, she's a juggler.
Yes. Okay. Did you guys bond over juggling?
I don't think we ever juggled together. We did like a workout one time, mm-hmm, on Game Changers, yeah, which is really, yes, weird.
And even before Tiger King, she had like the, you know, tiger bikini. One piece.
I wonder if she's a Carol Baskin supporter.
I could see her being friends with Carol Baskin.
I could too.
And she's one of my dream interviews. I've never really gotten the chance to talk to her, but I've been dying to try to get her on because I really want to do a When or at War podcast, but I have not gotten any. There was one time she said, hey, could you do it this weekend? And I couldn't. And then that was it.
How many times have you reached out?
Probably like three or four.
And she just doesn't respond?
One time she did respond. I just couldn't do it the one time she responded, and then that was it.
You should try again.
I'll keep trying. speaking of YouTube tutorials, Andrea, Elizabeth Richardson says, please do a YouTube tutorial of your many braids.
Oh, the Survivor braids. Well, I would have to round up the troops and get Suri.
Mm-hmm.
And who else did the braids?
Who's the best braider of Survivor?
Suri is really good. Yeah, Suri did all my braids for Game Changers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was great.
Okay.
And then I would do some braids too. I'm not the best, but when you're sitting around and have nothing to do, mm-hmm, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Also, Elizabeth said, was there anything about Philip Shepherd that was uncharacteristically normal that surprised you or that we wouldn't see in the edit? I'm a fan. Elizabeth says he's the original Lion of Survivor. And then she added Tony, the hashtag Lion King of Survivor.
I don't think there's anything normal about Philip.
Nothing?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to him in a while,
yeah,
but I know that we used to talk, I think between Redemption Island and Game Changers Redemption Island and Karamoan. Mm-hmm. And he would call me and then he would talk for an hour and then I would just listen.
I've had a phone call or two like that.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything super normal about Philip. I like the guy, but we kind of kept in touch between Redemption Island and then Karamoan. But a lot of our relationship was just him calling me and then talking for an hour. And then after an hour, I would say, okay, Philip, I actually have to go. And then that was our relationship for a while. He likes to talk.
He's a talker. And then I think the last question that I have for you is, this is from Zaddy Taran. Wants to know, who's more indecisive, the survivors during the episode or kindergarten Andrea? Can I play the clip from Instagram?
Yes.
Okay. Here's the clip you posted recently of kindergarten Andrea.
Want to stay home?
No.
Okay. Well, it's up to you, whatever you want to do. Do you want to go to school? Well, do you? Do you want to go to school?
I don't know.
You can, or you can stay home. You want to stay home?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We were watching home videos and it was just insane to watch me as a kid because I was so indecisive, but also loved the drama. I mean, if you can, so the clip's on my Instagram, but there are no tears. There's no tears. Yeah. I'm wiping away invisible tears. I think I was just wanting my dad to tell me what to do. And so I just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I've got one of those at my house. I would feel like that was I think you need a nap. I think that's a nap time.
I mean, there's other home videos of me pushing my cousins out of the way so I can be in front of the camera. So it was a weird walk down memory lane.
Okay. All right. Well, Andrea, this was so much fun to get to catch up. I'm really glad that you were able to spend some time with us today. I always look forward to when we get to do one of these.
Yeah, me too. You're the best.
Andrea, come on.
No, you are. You've been always so nice to me and supportive. And I'm always happy that we're able to do this.
Well, I'm always thrilled when you get to do it. And it's really that it's been so fun watching you and your career over these last 9 years from when we, first saw you as just a Survivor freshman all those years ago. We were just starting up the podcast at that time.
I know, Miss Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never forget.
Why didn't you juggle for Miss Survivor? Why did you rap?
Oh, well.
And do the worm.
I don't know. Because I have so many skills, Rob.
So many skills.
So it's hard. You know, sometimes you have to save some of the skills for later.
Yes. Is it true that you still want Miss Survivor to come back?
Well, look. Times have changed, and I loved doing it back then. But Rob, that was before the internet got nasty.
Okay.
And well, I know that the reason you stopped doing it was because you were having a lot of people just taking it too seriously and actually being mean. So I completely understand why.
You know, it
you
was
stopped.
The one, and Natalie Anderson, she's back. She's the reigning Miss Survivor, and she's on this season. But that the one where it was Natalie Anderson versus Tasha versus Kelly Wentworth. And then it was too hotly contested, and then it spilled over to Second Chances.
Yeah. I mean, if people can agree to be nice, chill out.
And then
we had
it was Spencer versus Jeremy versus Tony. So still half the people that were in the last one are on this season.
Wait, who won that? Who won
Spencer?
That one?
Spencer's the reigning Mr. Survivor.
Wait, have you talked to Spencer?
I saw
lately?
Him recently. Yeah, that he.
Oh, nice.
That he is out here in Los Angeles now, and he's out, he just moved out here with his girlfriend, and they moved out right before everything, like the beginning of March.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh, that's great though. I know. I remember I listened to the last episode that you did with him, and it was. Yeah. Interesting. So I love Spencer. I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, I saw him. He had come by here for an hour, like the day after he got to Los Angeles, that his girlfriend was going on an interview somewhere, and he had an hour to kill in the Valley. So he came through and I talked to him for a little while then.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're so connected.
Well, I know everybody. I'm like this is like the Survivor High School, and you guys graduate, and then sometimes the people the kids come through.
Yeah, sometimes those middle school women come on through.
The middle school women come back and visit, and like, well, I can't believe you're still here. Like, I know. I'm just trying to get my pension. all right, Andrea, anything else that you're watching? I always like to ask people right now, as people are looking for other Netflix and recommendations besides Tiger King, anything else you could tell people to check out?
Oh, what else?
Steven gave us a book recommendation last night.
Yeah, I've been watching Little Fires Everywhere.
Yes.
On Hulu with Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. And I've started back on Ozark.
Oh, yeah. I heard good season.
Ozark's really good.
Yes.
Those are the two right now. Those two and Tiger King. Okay. And then, oh, and also if you, the thing is I never know exactly where it's going to be playing, but I'm going to be on GMA again on Saturday.
Yes.
Doing the binge this segment, which I've been doing, for Good Morning America. So.
Well, that's very exciting.
Yeah. I guess check your local listings. It's hard to always say where, because the first time
and
I
you tell
it,
people what to binge.
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't have my topics yet for that, but you'll find out more if you tune in on Saturday.
Check it out. Again, congratulations on all your success. Of course, you guys are doing the People Now show remotely. How's that been to do the show now, not in person with everybody?
It's been a huge adjustment, especially since I went to Wisconsin and I was on my parents' Wi-Fi, which was terrible. Mm-hmm. The slowest Wi-Fi, may as well be dial-up. It was so bad. So then I had to buy a whole new router, a whole new internet service, which still is kind of wonky. Like, I'll have to restart my router a few times every day. Mm-hmm. And I probably went through all my gigabytes doing this podcast.
Whoa, no. You're blaming me?
I wasted
your internet.
It was.
I don't think that's how it works. It's not like a cell phone plan.
No, it's weird. Everything, I'm learning how different everything here in rural Wisconsin is. It's a plan. Like, you can only hit a certain amount of gigabytes. But
we should have turned the video off.
It's fine. I liked seeing your face. Okay. It was totally worth it. I think my work's gonna reimburse me. At least I hope.
I hope so.
It was. No matter what, it's totally worth it. I'm so grateful to still be working because, especially with these times, I'm so happy to have a job. So paying a little extra for internet is just so worth it. Now that I have faster internet, I'm able to do interviews. It's been going really well. Because now some of the celebrities can actually meet my parents. So I had, I had Henry Winkler on the show.
Yes.
And I've never introduced my dad to any of the celebrities. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't FaceTime, I'm not going to FaceTime my dad.
He's too busy hanging out with Ralph Kaiser.
Yeah. My dad got to, because Henry Winkler asked who I was with and who I was self-isolating with. And my dad was right there. And so I'm like, okay, I never do this, Henry, but my dad is a huge fan, loved Happy Days. And, Henry Winkler was the Fonz. Mm-hmm. So my dad comes on.
Ron Howard also was from that show.
Yeah. And so my dad actually got to meet Henry Winkler on the interview. And I think they're going to actually play it on the show because it was a cute interaction. And then Henry was like, oh, well, give me Royal's address and I'll send him this signed poster. I'll sign this poster. It was the first picture I ever took on Happy Days. And so it's cool. It's been really fun.
Yeah. And now that you are we're both you've walked a mile in my shoes now, Andrea. You know what it's like to just be in your house and in your pajamas and you can't do it in your pajamas because you're on video. But this is what we do.
Pajamas on the bottom.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Nobody knows if I've worn jeans in years. Who knows?
Yeah, it's
fun,
less stressful.
Right?
Yeah, it's fun. It's actually more stressful than my normal day to day, just because I'm worried about the technical issues with Zoom and with my internet. But it's actually a nice, comfortable feel talking to people on Zoom because they're in their own home.
Yeah.
It's really chill. There's less pressure on the people end. For breaking headlines. They're just happy we're able to do a show.
Yeah.
So it's been really enjoyable. And I was kind of in a weird, I don't know. I think I got out of New York at the right time with everything going on. And so I've just kind of been chilling. And I think I'm a better, more relaxed version of myself when I'm in Wisconsin.
Okay. All right. Andrea, how do people check out everything that you're doing on the show?
Yeah. So People Now is at 1 p.m. Eastern time on People's Twitter handle. They always tweet it out a couple times. You can check it out there. It's also on Facebook, also goes on YouTube. And
is
then,
the show live if you're watching it during the day?
So it's live at 1 p.m. The difference from doing it remotely is we actually record everything before because we wouldn't be able to do it live on Zoom. So during the day, right before leading up to when it goes live, Jeremy and I, my co-host, we will record certain stories, we pre-tape the interviews, and then put it together.
Got it.
So you can check that out. And then obviously GMA on Saturday.
Check your local listings.
Yep.
DVR the whole show. Yeah.
I'll do a juggle tutorial.
Juggling tutorial. Where would you put that? Do you have a YouTube channel? Or will it be on Instagram?
I do have a YouTube channel, but I don't really do that much with it. I'll just do an Instagram story or something.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that It's not, I don't know. It's not that complicated.
Yeah. Well, people want it. Look, people want content right now, Andrea.
That's true.
Okay. That's fine. And then you're going to come back and then we're going to do the podcast of the, was it nicest survivors or least nice survivors?
We're going to do a podcast of the meanest survivors.
And that'll be the last, that'll be the last episode of Rob is a podcast then. That's how we're going to end the series.
Yeah. Just to give everyone a teaser, who is the, who's one of your top 10 meanest survivors, Rob?
Well, you want me to spoil the podcast already? But that he's in jail.
Okay.
That's okay. It's one of my, it's a hint. So it's a tease.
All right.
That's what we just say in the biz. Okay. All right. There you go. All right. Andrea Belke, thank you so much. This was so wonderful to get to catch up. Happy to hear everybody is doing okay over by you, and looking forward to talking again soon. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everybody. There you have it. The great Andrea Belke back here with us. One of the really, really fun, great guests that we get to talk to on the podcast. And always a thrill to get to catch up with Andrea. Okay. So we still got a lot coming up this weekend on the podcast. I'm going to have our feedback show with Hannah coming up on Saturday. On Renap is still coming your way this weekend. Season 3, episode 7 of Small Wonder. I'm very excited about that one. And on This Week in Survivor, Angie Kontz is going to join us. And then on The Wiggle Room, we'll get into everything from this week and this week's Wand Off. I want to just also update you guys as well on something else that we have going on with. I've talked about how on the patron page where we've been taking all of the money that's come in from our new patrons, going to be donating that to directrelief.org. They are providing personal protective equipment for doctors and nurses. I announced last night how well we're doing with all of that. But I also have an update today about, in addition to that, people who are either already patrons or other people in the community that want to contribute to that and either don't want to become a patron or are already a patron. I started up a GoFundMe on that, and as I was recording the podcast with Andrea today, I see that we have hit the goal, which I had set, which was $2,500 on that fundraising page as well. So that's really incredible. So we have now raised over $2,500 on a separate GoFundMe that I started for directrelief.org. So that's been really incredible. If you want to contribute to that effort, robiswebsite.com/PPE. Charity. Rob has a website.com/PPE charity as well, in addition to everything we're already doing with our new patrons for the month of April. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Hope you're doing okay wherever you are. And Facebook Friday as well coming up for the patrons on Friday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Happy Passover to those of you guys celebrating Passover, and Easter as well this weekend. Happy Easter to everybody celebrating Easter. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Bye.